If you're just now tuning in, Harry has already confused and bamboozled Mike. So, all right, now that you'll want to twist your mic needs to point up at your mouth.
Yes, like this.
Like that. Yep. There you go.
Hmm.
Check 1, 2. Hey, everybody. No.
That's perfect.
Bad Harry. Okay. Oh boy, the boss is texting.
Yay. He knows how to text?
Yeah, my boss just drove by Spangles in Kansas or Missouri or wherever.
I'm still just shocked he texts.
No, my boss is pretty cool. I think he's 60 maybe, but he taunts me because he's a boomer.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he posts boomer memes to the Bob and Tom Facebook page, which is full of boomers, they do really, really, really well. And mine don't do as well because mine is like content or, you know, like updates.
Mm-hmm.
And then he posts the boomer memes and it blows up. And so on my door, he posted under my title, DPPP, Director of Poorly Performing Memes. And so every time he posts a meme and it does really well, Mittens is sitting on everybody's coat.
Getting in my Carhartt.
He taunts me.
Instantly goes for the Carhartt jacket.
I left my coat in the car, so my cats don't get jealous when I get home.
That was the first bit of cat hair that coat has seen, because Mr. Yowington's.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And then last weekend, my sister, her dog Rock died. Big old pit bull. This pit bull loved Gunther.
Aww.
It was kind of cute to watch them cuddle with each other and watch him growl at anyone who got too close to her.
Huh.
Pit bulls are nice when they're on your team.
Yeah. My favorite memes are the pit bull memes where Pitbull runs back in house to bite child.
Oh my, Harry! Look at your coat.
Oh man, she's going deep.
She's in there.
She's really getting in there.
It's like, this is warm. Do you know how warm this is?
Put this on the Instagram.
And soft. Like, I can't believe how soft this thing is.
Mittens just went ahead and made herself comfy in Harry's coat.
There's like 50 bazillion other things in this house.
But this is new.
Yeah, that's true. I'm going to fall asleep in my coat.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you guys ready?
Hold up.
Is this the cough button here?
Yes.
All right.
Yes, use it responsibly.
Where's Harry's cough button? I want to be able to use that responsibly, too.
It's within reach of me.
Can't silence me. Can't silence
me, bro. Shut this off.
Oh, man, my daughter's on that all the time.
Waifus? Did you see the Arby's thing I put in the group? With the waifus?
Yep.
Arby's promoting waifus?
Arby's been killing it, though. You know, like, on the memes, online and stuff. Like, I'm not that fan of Arby's that much.
I don't even have kids, and it's annoying me. I'm hearing it way too much. What is it from?
It's a Korean, like, kid show. It was like a very small thing they did.
Yeah.
And it kind of just blew up. Like, it was small. Like, if you get on Amazon and you pick the Pink Fong thing, it comes up. It's like the first thing that's there, and then it just goes to something else, right?
Right. Man, Patreon moved everything all around, and it's...
Yeah. Of course, the Baby Shark Halloween one's really cool, too. Because it's got the mummy shark. Okay. That's fine.
I have to... Memory Leams.
Memory Leams. What?
Baby Shark. Oh, damn it. You know what we need to do? We need to cleanse our palate here.
Paradigm of absolute control. And that's why we're just out here doing simple things, pointing out that we're meant to be in nature and be natural. And this is where we find the source that God made to transcend the new world order. And that's why they want to try to.
Tad was supposed to be here.
Tad Wister.
But he had a wreck, so.
So he claims.
No, I saw it. He slid off the side of the road.
Is that his car?
Yep.
What more do you need to know about these people? I'll go out and face this scum. They literally crawl out from under rocks. They have green looking skin. And they run around screaming, we love Satan, we want to eat babies. I have them on video. Okay.
Are you ready?
No.
You're never going to be ready.
Oh, it's...
Oh, shit. Called out.
Because it is, this is my work. This is a work laptop.
Is your mic on?
This is my work laptop.
Oh.
There you go. Okay.
This is my work laptop. As you can clearly see, since it's running
Windows 10. Harry Price is a lie, folks.
Since it's Windows 10, I'm using my work laptop.
And you can't change the default search to.
Oh, I can. I definitely can. But I'm working and I need quick searches.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah.
We'll get into this on the air.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, let's get back to some boring subjects.
Understand the risk to our country.
Freedom brings people together.
You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com.
Welcome to episode 346. My name is Chris Spangle. It's so good to be back after a failed coup attempt. I swear, the Cats and Jammer Kids that make up the co-host stable. I'll get into it. Harry Price is here. He's been exposed as a fraud by Mike Trant.
How you doing, folks?
He'll be here in just a moment. So we'll be talking a little bit about internet censorship. We're going to give you an update and talk a little bit about the Joe Rogan conversation with Twitter. And if we get time after all that, we're going to talk some Mueller report and just give you some facts on what may be coming up. So very glad to be back, and we'll continue the show right after this strong warning.
Warning. This show is for adults, produced by semi-adults. So the language is sometimes strong and offensive.
I don't know what I said.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians, where our goal is to help you sound smarter while talking to your friends. We examine current events from a libertarian perspective while treating modern politics with all of the irreverence it deserves.
There has been lie after lie.
We toss out the screaming heads, put people before political parties, and give context to the news to make you think. Now, here's our host, a 15-year veteran of politics and media, Chris Spangle.
Hi, Muffins. See, it's a rare treat for Muffins.
It's just jealousy.
Nope, couldn't get her. I was going to put her on camera for the YouTube audience, but...
Just wants to know what her Carhartt jacket's at.
So, Harry brought a beautiful Carhartt jacket and mittens... You can see on our Instagram story, mittens just curled right up in it. Very cozy.
Yeah, it is out cold in my jacket. I just got that.
She.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. X-gender. Which, Indiana just got that. I just heard that on the radio on the way over here.
Yeah,
you get the X on your ID.
So, Mike, when you go to renew your license, you can be an X. I didn't even know that music ended. I may just do that from now on.
All my lobbying paid off.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, Mike Trant joins us. Am I saying your last name right?
Yes, exactly.
All right. I've known you forever, but I don't know how to say your last name. Harry Price is here. Harry, how are you?
Going good.
Good. Glad to see you. I was sick the last couple of weeks. I was the Friday before 2 weeks ago. I went to the former official green room of We Are Libertarians, the Stacked Pickle. So I hadn't really eaten on Friday. And if you're new to the program, by the way, we just chit-chat for 20 minutes, and we talk about whatever we want to talk about. And I timestamp everything, so if you want to get right to it, then you can. But if you want to have fun, then you can keep listening now. But So I didn't really eat Friday, and I went to the gym, and I was in the sauna for 20 minutes, and so I came out dehydrated and starving, and I went to the old Stacked Pickle, and I didn't even get out of the parking lot before my stomach started to hurt, which I just chalked up to like, hey, you didn't eat, and then you worked out, and then you ate a lot, and then your stomach's just a little, you know, discombobulated. So I go home, I take a shower, I was going out to meet friends, and then so it's like 8 o'clock on a Friday, I think it was like 7:30, and I'm driving to this Irish bar on the east side, what's it called, the Golden Ace. And like, you walk in there, it looks like something out of South Boston. It's like the decor hasn't been changed since the 1950s. It's cheeseburgers are $4. You know, pictures of Irish politicians all over the place. It's a very cool, like, little bar. And I'm sitting there talking to my friend April, who is a local Republican. She's our age. She's beautiful. And we're just chit-chatting. And I go, I hate to leave you alone, but I can't stay. And she goes, oh, it's okay. I know you're not feeling well. I go, right. I run outside. This guy's in the way, and I like almost push him out of the way. I run around the corner, and I just hurl all over the side of this Irish bar, which in the 85-year history of the Golden Ace, I'm not the first person to do this. So let's be fair.
Shocking.
And these two Irishmen are just walking in laughing, having a great time laughing at my misfortune.
It's a slow Tuesday for them at the bar.
Yeah.
Look, who just turned 21. Yeah.
But, you know, it was so all that food and water and everything came out. And so I'm just standing, I'm like, I feel better. Because, you know, when you hurl, you go, I rallied, all right? It was a boot and rally. And so I'm like, maybe I'll go in. I didn't get any on me. I don't, you know, like, nah, I better go home. You know, it just it's probably safer. So I'm driving home, and it's probably about 30 minutes away, and I get here, and as I start to pull into the complex, I start to vagal. Now, the vagal response is when your vagus nerve shuts down because it feels that your body is under attack because of stress or pressure, and so your body just collapses so the bear doesn't eat you because it thinks you're dead. And so it's a prehistoric it's like if you're running and then all of a sudden you throw up, it's because your vagus nerve is under attack. So I start to pass out. And so I gain enough consciousness and to slow down, and I'm like creeping along, get into my spot, I pass out, I wake up, and I immediately know, uh-oh. I jump out of the car, I run inside, and I hurl in the trash can. And then I was like, oh, you know, I feel great now, but I'm going to need some electrolytes. I better go get some Gatorade. So I go to the local convenience store, and I get some Gatorade, and I come home, and, you know, I down like a big jar bell of red Gatorade.
Okay. Oh, red Gatorade.
Red Gatorade.
The bold move.
Yeah. Bold move. Bold. Yes. Soon enough, I would see the red Gatorade.
The red mist.
Yeah, but that was the last time. But I was so dehydrated on Saturday that I could just lay in bed. Like, I literally, that Friday night, I don't know what it is about throwing up. And I haven't thrown up in probably a decade. The last time I threw up was I was getting blood drawn. And I had, I hate needles. Like, I have a deathly fear of anything medical or hospitals. Like, when I was a kid, my grandpa had his leg amputated. He was in the hospital for a year. He died 3 times. Like, he's still alive, but I think it just like deep rooted this fear in me. And so when I had to get my vaccinations, I was woke at a young age. When I had to get my vaccinations as a kid, it took 8 nurses to hold me down at 5 years old. It's like, you're not going to vaccinate me, globalists. I see your birds floating around monitoring my every location. I'm tired of being social engineered. Because I've just always had that fear. So the insurance in 2010 needed to take a blood draw, and so they did. And I, the traveling nurse, I pass out again. I wake up. I just projectile vomit on the nurse, on mittens, on my ex-wife. It was brutal. And that's the last time I've thrown up. I mean, that was probably 8 years ago, maybe. So it took it out of me. But Friday night, I was losing my mind. I was calling people going, can somebody like make sure that I don't die? Like I was super depressed too. Like, I don't know. It just took me to like a weird mental state just being so dehydrated And I made it through the night, and a friend came over the next day to kind of help me out. And I was in a bad state. So I didn't start feeling well. I was well enough to go to work Tuesday.
Okay.
But I wasn't well enough to do the show because I was done by like 3 that day. I was at like 75%. And fucking Jeff Oske comes to work with bronchitis or the flu. I don't know which.
Mm-hmm.
And my poor little immune system goes, ooh, let's pick that up. That looks like fun. So I spent all day. I spent from Wednesday through Sunday
mm-hmm.
just totally done. And so I was just like, I haven't studied. I just don't want to do the show. So I needed another break. And I said to the guys, I said, listen, I'm not going to be able to do the show for a couple weeks. I'm just down and out. And, you know, mentally, physically, I'm just not there. You know, so it'd be funny if you guys could do a coup episode, you know, make a joke out of it where you know, are they taking over? Lo and behold, Tuesday, I get two shows.
Mm-hmm.
The lack of coordination to take down Dear Leader, Hody and Sarah, and I think Dennett or Reinhold, excuse me, were doing one, and then they all like joined on authentic low key wall. And so mm-hmm. like that's why there were two episodes last week, is because they were trying to oust me from my throne, and they couldn't even coordinate it. What was that?
Who knows?
Yeah,
don't worry about it.
Probably the neighbors upstairs, yeah. Very upset.
Ninjas.
But I was just laughing when I looked at on Wednesday and saw two episodes in there. I go, you know, if you're gonna take me out, you better be a little better organized about it. But I think it was Hody being too enthusiastic,
mm-hmm.
and he tried to have his own low key wall, and then.
Mm-hmm.
Then Reinhold basically, he stood up for you and he said, no, there's only one Loki wall and it is hosted by Harry Price.
Correct. It's my show. It's my stuff.
Yeah.
Get your own.
Right. Okay. You have Wall Daily.
Yeah, you got Wall Daily. You know, also own We Are Basementarians. Don't take that.
Which I have an amazing couple logos for, by the way. I've never shown that to you, but I have great logos that Peach did for me. Well,
let's see what else I got. Yeah, We Are Basementarians, Cyberloafing, that's all mine. I own that.
yeah.
Got many shows.
Yeah, Hody.
Set on them like Disney.
And Hody's done a great job in the meantime of talking to every presidential candidate he can talk to.
Mm-hmm.
He has
done a great job.
He's talked to every libertarian he can find. He's reached out to every Democrat, every Republican, every independent. Only the libertarians have gotten back to him because. For some reason, Democrats and Republicans don't want to talk to We Are Libertarians, but the Libertarians will. And he's got a cool debate special coming up. He's going to do a series of debates between all the candidates that'll talk to him. So we're out there. If you're listening and you're connected to any of these campaigns, be it Tulsi Gabbard or Bill Weld or...
I'll call John McAfee for you.
Or John McAfee or Donald Trump or, you know... Klobuchar or Cory Booker, any campaign, any of you, if you're out there, or hit their Twitter or their press people and say, hey, We Are Libertarians wants to talk to you, because we really do want to present to you the information. It's going to be a very fair interview. It's not going to be a gotcha thing. That's not what we do here. We want to talk to all the presidential candidates, and Hody has aggressively, as Hody's the nicest person. But he's also very aggressive, and I like it because he's politely aggressive.
Correct. And wrong about Powerade. Powerade is disgusting.
Powerade is gross. Gatorade is
yeah. Far superior.
Right.
Far superior.
Right.
And the only flavor of Gatorade is orange. All other flavors are wrong.
That's what my first go-to was orange that night, and then I went to red, and I got to say, red was better than orange.
Yeah, but if it's come back up. You really want that orange.
Yeah, no. So rough, smells rough
better.
Week.
Smells
so,
better.
Thanks to everybody for stepping up
yes,
and period. For...
Yes,
I'm just trying to get to the chat so I can actually see it. Because if you're a $10 a month and up patron, then you get a notification that we're going live and you can chit-chat with all the other viewers. So right now we've got like 10 people in there chit-chatting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 10 people. So... So yeah, we
yeah, we had fun over low key back on the Torch channel. We did some I had 10 live viewers, and then after the show we raided the LRFM live.
That's the other thing, is that I was waiting and waiting and waiting, cuz you had done the episode on Tuesday. Yeah. And I was waiting and waiting, and I didn't post it until like the next Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally just in group go, "Where is that episode? Is somebody going to give that to me?" And Reinhold goes, "Well, we did it on Twitch." And I go, "For 14 people. How about we put it in the feed where 10,000 people are going to hear it?"
Well.
And so he got me the audio, but I was just like, the typical Harry. Harry decided to coup and take over the thing he's in charge of. you didn't even coup the thing that was the bigger part of the We Are Libertarians. You just took over what you already had control over. I was just like, typical fucking Harry. He
consolidated
just,
power.
He just consolidated on Twitch, which he already has total control over. I couldn't even get into the alternative Twitch if I wanted to.
Did you lock yourself back out?
I have cleared my cookies since, you know, December of last year. Rough times here at the Spangle household with the sickness. Mm-hmm. And the greatest tragedy of all was yesterday. And Mike, this is the first time Mike has been on the program in the last, after what he told mm-hmm. me off air. He was not upset about the news that my slingshot broke yesterday. Now
I'm an animal lover.
These are not animals. These are geese. These are Canadian geese who are not animals. They're monsters. They're turds with wings.
Yeah.
With a bad attitude.
Scourge. They're a scourge.
They are. And I live next to a beautiful lake. Tell the people how beautiful it is out there.
Oh, it's unbelievable. I want to live here.
Yeah. It's a luxury apartment.
When my wife divorces me, this is where I'm going to move to. I've already decided. This is it.
I wouldn't. I've seen your wife. She's very pretty. So she may.
We have an amazing daughter who loves geese, by the way. So
if you get divorced, she may already be here. no, but yeah, it's so cute. Like I've been having father pangs. My loins are seeking a mate so that I may have children as I have aged into 35. And then I hear these two. Mike is essentially a stay-at-home dad. Harry was mm-hmm. a stay-at-home mm-hmm. dad. He's showing pictures of his daughter sleeping on his back. And then Mike shows a video of his daughter going, "Where's daddy?" And I'm just like, I need a wife so I can mm-hmm. have children too. So it's very cute. I know your daughter likes geese, but why have you not taught her that she shouldn't like geese? Because these are predators.
Correct.
Well, they run from her.
Okay, good. Yeah,
she chases geese. She thinks they're just the most fun thing in the world to play with.
No, they're very. They will attack her. They will.
they haven't attacked. They I think geese smell fear, and she's not afraid of them, so they run
right.
from her.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
And you know, when you're afraid of geese, they attack you.
And when your daughter has E. coli, salmonella, and AIDS or something from being attacked by a goose, mm-hmm. Old Spangle over here will be saying, "Don't you wish you had a slingshot?"
So far, so good.
So yes,
I live my life.
Yesterday, I have the lake here, and the geese wander up on the lawn. And when my sliding door opens, those little bastards start running, because after 2 years of having the slingshot, they know that when the door slides open, trouble's a coming. And so I shoot the little glass pellets. And listen, you can't kill one of these things. Like, I hit one directly on the butt yesterday, and he just went meh.
Allegedly.
And so you can't actually kill him. I have a BB gun, but I just shoot off the noise, not the actual BBs, because I don't want to kill them. I just don't want them near me.
Allegedly.
Right. No, I do want to kill them, but I won't.
Allegedly. I'm calling for violence against geese. Allegedly.
I am calling for violence against geese. I think they're a menace to society. And my slingshot broke mid-arc. It snapped back. And now I don't know what to do. There were geese out there today. I had to revert.
He's mocking you.
Before I bought this Daisy slingshot, I was throwing potatoes at them. I mean, I literally had old potatoes, and I'm just like hurling them at them, and they're like,
"That joke's on you. Yeah. Free food.
Right.
Dinner."
Right. So my neighbor yesterday, I saw him, and he goes, "Yeah, I've seen you shooting at them. I'm okay with it. I'm not going to report you just because I don't like the cops." The funny thing is, the neighbor upstairs and the neighbor downstairs both like Alex Jones, but I'm the one with the Libertarian podcast. So, and the neighbors across the hall, always high. That's good. So yeah, we have quite the neighborhood, but yeah. I have to get a new slingshot. Spring is here.
Can actually get a new rubber band. Get a better one.
Yep. Yeah, they're like only like $4 for a replacement.
Yeah. The other thing with it is they're vermin. They're disgusting. Their poop causes all kinds of respiratory issues in the humans.
Right.
They're a plague. Honestly, we need more border collies to go out and protect our lake borders.
Yep.
from this menace. Canada's not sending us their best. Sending the worst.
I was at Riley's Children's Hospital today, which is one of the greatest hospitals in the world. It was Jaden's Whitcomb Riley. Gave the Indianapolis both a great library and a great children's hospital. And I was helping that. Nothing's wrong. I was there for their radiothon, helping with that a little bit. And they have wolves, fake wolves everywhere. You know, those black silhouette wolves?
Yeah.
And they said it's because the geese fly down into the children's park. There's a courtyard where the sick kids go out and play, and the geese come in. And they congregate in this place where sick children play.
Adorable.
No, they have no conscience. Okay? These are the sickest kids in the city, in the Midwest. They're here to heal, and geese. Geese are here to just terrorize.
We need more birds of prey. Okay?
Honestly.
You know, just swoop down, get a nice natural predator, and take these little bastards out.
Right.
All right? They're annoying. You know, about the only thing I probably go to war for is to take out a geese.
Honestly. And listen, I'm an animal. I'm not an animal lover, but I appreciate animals. I do not shoot the ducks. The ducks are delightful.
Yeah, the ducks are fine.
Right. Ducks are cool.
Now, if a vote for Bernie Sanders is a vote for socialism, and as soon as you get socialism, all those geese will be gone because there'll be no food, so people will eat them.
Yes.
Okay. They'll be gone.
Yeah. But we'll be dead.
Well, yeah, but they'll be gone.
All right. Well,
can we talk about how I exposed Harry Price as a fraud?
Oh, that's a thank you, Mike. Thank you, Mike. No, complete fraud.
Complete fraud.
he was searching for something, and what was he searching for?
Harry opens
Mike?
His laptop, and I see Google splashed across his laptop.
Yes, you did.
And Mike, what is he always telling me I ought to use?
You should use DuckDuckGo, as I do myself, always.
Good.
On all my platforms.
Good.
Regardless of cell phone, computer, tablet, anything.
Good. Right.
No excuses.
Right. So
now,
do as I say, not as I do.
First off, all right, my personal cell phone, okay? All right, my personal cell phone. All right.
We're not discussing your cell phone.
Right.
What was on
right.
your computer,
I got
Harry?
DuckDuckGo, like right in the freak there, okay? All right. The main reason why it's sitting there, right, is because it's a work laptop. All right. Okay.
So on work laptops, you can't change the default search engine to DuckDuckGo?
I can. But
okay.
I can. Definitely can.
All right.
I definitely
no
can.
Further questions.
He nailed it.
Point of order. Hold on. No. See, what happens is, okay, everything at our organization is run through G Suite. So there's no point of me going outside because everything I do on this computer is already controlled through Google. So there's just no point.
I'm hearing excuses.
Yeah, it's all
an excuse.
I'm not convinced at all.
If I had my own laptop, my personal laptop, that doesn't have Google on it.
Unprincipled.
If this was my Lenovo laptop.
Hypocritical.
I don't like this.
Unbelieving. Doesn't believe in the products that he pushes.
Done. You know what? I'm just going to I'm going to be 30 minutes late now to go home, drop off my work laptop, pick up my personal laptop and come here.
I bet niece probably could get DuckDuckGo on this computer for you.
I could get DuckDuckGo on this computer.
Oh, I could. I definitely could. I just don't see the point because like I switch computers. I just don't set it up because everything's controlled by my G Suite account.
Okay.
So I just log in and it just throws everything in there from Google. So I pull everything down.
Gotcha.
So it already tracks everything I do.
On
this machine.
Just dig in the grave.
All right, now you know what this jazz music means, right?
Is it like mid-roll?
No, not advertisements necessarily, but just thank yous.
Oh.
It's time to do some thank yous before we get into the main show now.
Have we always had music?
We have not. It's always been here. I've just never actually used it. And I thought, you know, what better way to thank people than to have a little fun music underneath this? A little jazz. I paid for it. I might as well use it, right?
Yeah.
So we got this one. So here, you can check out the music that we got. We got this one. This is more of a late night.
It's a bit too busy.
Yeah.
It's too busy.
But no offense, Mike. Harry's the jazz expert here.
This would be good when we start doing like Wall After Dark and we more Tonight Show once we get the studio.
Yeah. This is kind of fun. Probably a little too much going on.
Mm-hmm.
The man with the trumpet. Let's hear it with Big Bill.
Oh.
Oh.
Mm.
Ooh.
Oh, there you go.
Funky.
Yeah.
Get down with your bad self. Harry, that really speaks to me.
The funky guitar does.
Yeah.
It's jazz guitar.
Ooh. Okay. I'm liking that. It's only 2 minutes long. You know, I can't keep it under 2 minutes. You know what? I'm out there. I can't keep
plenty
it.
Plenty of time, Chris.
I can't keep
plenty
it under
of time.
Minutes. I like that one. All right. Let's hear around the room a little bit. Oh. Little Sinatra. I think my personal favorite, though, is this.
Out of absolute control.
Oh, yeah.
That's why we're just out here doing simple things, pointing out that we're meant to be in nature and be natural. And this is where we find the source that God made to transcend the new world order. And that's why they want to try to keep us out of it.
I'm angry. I've had enough of these people.
Little Stereo Deluxe. Alex Jones remix. But you know, let's go back to the jazz. We'll use this one. I want to thank Craig DaCosta for sending us something off of our Amazon wish list. From time to time, I will come home from work, and there will be a package on my doorstep, Harry. And I feel like a cam girl, and it's just a glorious day. And so he sent us a great interface for cell phones, as did Mario E. Mario E. also sent us some balloons. So we have kind of a party vibe for the YouTube channel.
Mm.
So if you haven't, you can watch all the shows on YouTube later. And listen to all the audio as well.
So that explains the balloons.
Yeah, so Mario sent these. So just go ahead and read some of these balloons.
Not that
Harry.
One.
This party sucks is one of them.
What's that one say?
Yas, bitch.
Okay. This one says, this party is shit. What does that one say?
Happy effing whatever.
Happy fucking whatever. And Mike, go ahead and read that one, please.
You effing did it. Congrats.
Are you guys not... are you afraid to curse?
I'm a dad now.
Oh.
Dads.
You know.
Where's your New Balance?
I'm not that much... I'm not that dad. I don't have cargo shorts.
But you won't say fucking. Like a grown-ass man.
I got Asics. I'm going to wait to get my New Balance when I get my minivan.
Okay. Yeah, are you really getting the minivan?
Really think about getting the minivan. Even though I was looking at some Foresters.
Uh-huh.
Get another Subaru. But Lace keeps looking at Miatas.
Okay.
And I'm just like, this is a two-seater. He's like, yeah, but, you know, this is fun.
Lacey needs to just reel it in because...
I know. She's the one looking at sports cars.
Because when Gunther 2 comes along...
Whoa.
So special thanks to Craig and Mario for helping out with our equipment needs, which you can find at WeareLibertarians.com. Special thanks to all of our patrons who continue to keep the lights on. This is a big project. We've got near 40 people that work on We Are Libertarians doing various things, and we supply all the software. We send them equipment. I'm sending Harry with a USB microphone tonight, so when he does those low-key walls, he doesn't sound like he did. And that's all from wish list and from your patronage. And in our hosting bills, we have mobile apps. We have radio streams. So, and all that takes money. And it all comes from our patrons. So I want to thank Ed Brehob, Jason Doolittle. I had to write this down so I don't mess it up. Memerty Libs. We have two Facebook pages. Two people do something very smart. Instead of buying advertising, they support us at $100 a month, so they know that I'll say their name every time in hopes that you will support them. And I do hope that you support them and go like their pages because they're doing great work. First is Memerty Libs, and the other is the Libertarian Coalition. They're really starting to step up their work and doing great stuff, so please go check that out. Christy Avery, obviously, watching live from the hot tub as we speak, and Craig DaCosta. I'm going to go through just a few of our $25 a month. Ryan Lindsay, who is working on a special e-zine that will be coming out soon. Liberty Memes, the actual Liberty Memes. The Gay Brothers support this program at $25 a month. We support them. Rob Place, Mario E., obviously, Ray Wolf, Ryan Hold, Catherine Iverson, Richard, Jacob Castor... Castorino, I think I said that very delicately. The Liberty Extract, Michael Schulteis, Joshua Sexton, Jacob Klingensmith, Eric Neff, Rick Irvine, Joey Turner, Carly Ernst, Brandon Kester, Dan Dunbar, Christopher Brokoff, and our good friend Todd Singer. So thank you to those top tier patrons, but all of our patrons and everybody that supports the show in any way. If you share share it, if you, like Brian Nichols, wrote an article for his website of the top 10 libertarian podcasts, put us on that. That's a great way to support the show. Go grab that off of the Libertarian Republic and share that. Share our memes, just whatever it takes to spread the word of mouth of the program. So we've got 10,000 listeners that listen to this program. We have 95,000 Facebook likes. We've got 5,000-6,000 Instagram likes. If all of you would just give a dollar or at least one share, think of the impact that we could have just by that one action that you're taking. So thank you guys. I just want to keep this going because I'm just enjoying the music so much. Maybe this is what we do. We just have like nice jazz underneath. But and if you're listening out there and you're not a patron, you can go sign up at wearelibertarians.com/support. You can do Patreon, where you'll get some bonus content. We've been putting out several hours of extra bonus content a month recently. You can sign up via PayPal. You can sign up monthly, weekly, daily, darn near, yearly contribution. You can do Bitcoin if you're a Bitcoin person. There's a ton of different ways that you can support the program, and it's not just through Patreon if you have a moral disagreement with them, as some do. So please check that out, wearelibertarians.com/support. We're going to be retooling the store very soon with some brand new t-shirts. You can still access the store. So as the music ends, I will end. But please support the program at wearelibertarians.com. I'm going to click the little marker here. That's what I do. So when I pause before I begin a new thing, it's because I can't do two things at once. Now we, the three of us, the big talk over the last week has really been, do you hear the geese?
I hear the geese.
The geese are barking. And I immediately stopped.
They're laughing at you.
Did you see the fire that came into my eyes when I heard that noise? And I almost ran outside, but I don't have my slingshot. So when the Amazon man is going to bring me my my tools to fight the enemy. I have a friend in Canada right now. I said, what is it like to be in the heart of evil? Censorship on the internet, on these big platforms, over the last couple weeks, it really seems like it's ramping up. And there's been two conversations going. There's been all the various things that are happening, but then there's also been the Joe Rogan podcast with Jack Dorsey, mm-hmm. right? Or is it Jack? It's not Jack Dorsey.
Jack Dorsey.
I'm thinking of Jack Dempsey, the fighter.
Jack Dempsey and Joe Rogan, that'd be a great podcast.
Yeah. Vidya I don't know how to say her last name. I apologize. I'm sure she's not listening. And Tim Pool. And they sat down and had a conversation for 3.5 hours. And a lot of people are talking about it. And I wanted to share my impressions, give you a little bit of information about it in case you don't want to spend 3.5 hours. You know, the impression that I had watching it was that Tim Pool destroyed Twitter and Twitter's just the evil empire. And then when I watched it, I didn't think Tim Pool did nearly as well as everybody said Tim Pool did. I mean, he did fine. Mm-hmm. And I think he made our case. I think the independent internet's case, the independent media's case to Twitter, and asked some very difficult questions. But I don't think that he'd necessarily listened to a lot of what they were saying. He was very repetitive. But he did have good points. And there were points where, you know, we'll play some of this, but like when you hear them explain why they banned certain people, mm-hmm. you go, this is nonsense. Like if you were to talk to Alex Jones, or if you were like, they brought up Alex Jones and grab your battle rifles. And it's like, if you actually watch that clip, it's very clear that like Jack Dorsey does not watch the clips. He doesn't really know a lot of the narrative. Mike and I were talking about this before, and I don't know if you picked this up, Harry. Like, Jack doesn't seem to be very aware of the conversations that we're having about his company.
Correct.
And I can only assume that's because successful people don't spend all day on Twitter having these conversations. But I think Tim Pool didn't – it wasn't a slam dunk. And I know that he went on Rubin and kind of talked a little bit about how he would have done some things differently. I did not catch that interview. But essentially the conversation was, why are you banning people? Why do you make the decisions that you make? Obviously, Jack Dorsey, CEO. Vidya is the head of essentially like the community management, the safety team, that she's the one that really is making the final decision on whether you're going to ban somebody permanently, like a Gavin McInnes or a Milo. You know, they're almost every one of the cases that we've talked about, like Gavin, Alex Jones, Milo, Sargon of Akkad, like her answers were, she was very convinced that she had done the right thing, mm-hmm. but they just didn't really, like, if you know about them, you're just going, this doesn't really seem to make a lot of sense. Like, why they made this particular? I'm trying to see if I can find
the timestamp when they were talking about it.
Yeah, I didn't do a great job of. I've been so busy and I haven't really prepped the way that I normally would prep for an episode. And we had like kind of a busy week, so we're going to be a little scattered in the audio that we're pulling from this. So I apologize for that, but
yep. Wish we had a producer like Escalja.
It would be great. Jack Dorsey, Sargon, because this one was, to me, was like the most ridiculous. Sargon.
So I think there's a bigger discussion. I think both of you could probably shed some important light on
that's
too outside
Tim
of Twitter.
Pool.
This weaponization of content from platforms is being used to get people banned from their banking accounts. You know, we can talk about Patreon, for instance. And again, this may just be something you could chime in on. Patreon banned a man named Carl Benjamin, also known as Sargon of Akkad. He's also banned from Twitter. And it was
Do you know why he got banned from Twitter?
I can see.
That's an interesting one.
I do have some of the details here. Do you want me to read them?
Yeah, please.
Okay.
Looks like it's going to be gross.
It's not stuff that I love saying, but I will say it.
Want Jack to say it?
I should make Jack
say it.
He doesn't like cursing either.
I must be a dad.
I curse more than he does, so I guess I should say it. First strike. Fuck white people, kill all men, die cis scum. None of the above qualify as hate speech.
When was that?
I don't have the dates. I'm sorry.
But he's a white guy. I mean, obviously, he's joking around there. White people.
It also sounds like he's trying to make a point about your rules and how you enforce them, not actually.
Possibly.
Well, which is also exactly why he got kicked off of Patreon. He was
exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I know he also posted a photo of interracial gay porn at some white nationalists to make them angry.
Yes. Yeah, he's funny.
Well,
he's funny sometimes.
I can understand how posting that photo is an egregious violation of the rules, whether or not he was trying to insult some people.
That's a very good point, and I wanted to bring that up. Is porn a violation of the rules?
Porn, generally, no.
Good.
Really?
Good for you.
Oh, so then why would
you be because it happens in my feed all the time. I follow a couple of naughty girls, and occasionally
they post
pictures of themselves engaging in intercourse. I'm like, yikes.
So then what were the other strikes for Sargon?
Yeah. Carl? Let's see. There was the use of a Jewish slur.
How do you use it?
To a person, you traitor, remainer, white genocide supporting Islamophile, Jewish slur lover. That should keep you going. Hashtag Hitler was right.
But these aren't general opinions. These are targeted.
These are targeted at somebody.
That sounds like he's being like he's making a joke.
So I understand. In context, it sounds like the other one. Like in context, what he's saying, particularly the fact that he's a white guy, that doesn't sound like a racial slur at all. I mean, he's saying fuck white people, and he is white.
In context, again, these are tied together.
Right.
I always knew that person was not to be trusted. That fucking Jewish slur.
Oh,
so there's a lot. Like, there's a bunch
of very specific person.
He's targeting.
He's being very trying to be very provocative.
And he's saying this about a specific Jewish person.
I don't know the race of this person. I'm sorry.
Right. And this is not okay. But this is not parody. This is not joking around.
We didn't view it that way. I'm just I'm not trying to re-litigate all this. I'm just telling you what they were. So you.
I knew he had done things that were like egregious violations of the rules because, you know, plain and simple, I didn't bring him up to, you know, go through it and try and figure out if he. But that it does sound like at least the first one was meant to be a critique of.
Yeah.
So
potentially, but there are a bunch of others if you want to hear them.
More than
sure.
That
keep it rolling.
This is again targeted. This is how I know one day that I'll be throwing you from a helicopter. You're the same kind of malignant cancer. Don't forget it. So there's just it's not one thing or two things or three things. This is like a bunch of them.
That's illusions of grandeur. Imagine thinking you're going to throw someone from a helicopter.
Well, he doesn't
get you in that helicopter.
Right.
He doesn't get the meme.
They don't get the meme, right. And none of them get the meme except Tim Pool, who kind of lives in his world. He's not alt-right, which the media is the real problem in all this, which we'll get to. But Tim Pool is a leftist. He worked for Vice. You know, Joe Rogan. At one point, Tim Pool looks at Rogan and says, "You're a socialist, right?" He goes, "Yeah, kind of." And then, you know, Jack Dorsey, I think, is probably the most libertarian person in the room out of the four of them. But it's very clear in watching that. The reason that I really wanted to go to that one is because we've talked about Sargon before. Sargon uses language that is intentionally inflammatory to his own detriment, where he gets himself kicked off of platforms because he says these things, and when taken out of context, they like that, they look very bad. And so, you know, the lefties who are working in the safety department at Twitter, when they get a million reports about this, you know, because there's a group of there's squads on both sides who are looking for offensive material from Tucker Carlson and Sargon and Gavin. And then on the right, they're looking for offensive things from Kathy Griffin or whomever. And, you know, the left leaning bent of Twitter, you know, they see, oh, look at him saying these slurs and all this, and they don't get who he is or what he's about. And so, look, there's a pattern of this guy using this language, and it's directed at people. And that was the big thing. It was, listen, we want debate to happen, even if the debate isn't good. We want you to have healthy conversations on the platform, but we can't control that. We can help create tools that might direct that. But at the end of the day, if you're going to harass someone, that is the problem. So if you're going on Twitter today and you're sharing an opinion, you're not going to get kicked off for that. If you're going on and you're being mean to somebody and you get reported for it, then they're going to start flagging you, either the algorithm or it's going to rise to the next level. I personally, after watching this, feel like I do nothing on Twitter that is even remotely going to ever rise to the level of getting kicked off. You know, I may troll people back, but I never do it in a way like that, where I'm using specific language that I know is going to get a rise out of certain people. So, like, it's almost like Sargon knows what he's doing and he's trying to become the martyr. That may not be his. But at the end of the day, I think that clip really exemplified all the examples that Tim Pool brought up, be it Milo or Gavin McInnes or any of the number of – and so I'm trying to save you 3.5 hours, but I do think that if you got the time, watch
it's all very similar.
It's all very similar. It is it is, we ban this person because there is a pattern of them targeting someone else with offensive language, and that's why we pulled them off. And they completely fail to understand the context. They keep saying, well, it's about the context. It's about the context. But they completely fail to understand the context of who Sargon is and what he is trying to achieve.
Right.
They ban him. And then when they would bring up somebody who is left-leaning, who was targeting people, they go, well, it was that one specific time.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, maybe it's not, because what they didn't seem to grasp was that there are squads on the left that are continually targeting Sargon, for instance, or Milo, and constantly reporting them. So you can have a pattern. But when the Disney producer starts telling Covington kids they ought to be put into wood chippers, well, that's just one incident. That's just one incident, and you know, we took action on that. But you don't know that that's a pattern, because nobody's following that guy around the internet and reporting him all the time. And so they didn't seem to quite grasp the fact that they have a pattern of It is a problem with the way that their system, their reporting system, is set up, and the way that one side is using it and the other is not. But I don't think that they really understand the problem that conservatives have with their product, being that's the situation.
Correct. And one thing I didn't hear, maybe I missed it, you know, I was watching Gunther through listening all 3 hours, was they tracking the reporting as harassment? I didn't remember ever hearing that in a track.
Because they never mentioned that. No,
yeah, no.
Yeah, because that's, to me, is also a form of harassment. Just constantly keep reporting people's posts.
They said they'd like to crack. That's what Learn to Code was about. That they do want to crack down on the mobs. You'll kind of hear it addressed here in the next clip that I want to play. We're only going to play a couple clips from this, but the next one I think was Dorsey being really thoughtful, and I think he kind of accidentally exposes that libertarianism is the only way for the world to work based on his experience. But yeah, they did kind of talk about that, but they said it's kind of hard to prove. Like, if you can't, if you know, Tim Pool brought up when, you know, one person goes and writes N and then the next person comments I and then G, you can't prove that they're in coordination with each other. You can't prove that that's a mob. That's kind of why Milo got banned, is that he was continually fanning the flames after Leslie Jones,
right,
for instance, you know, and so he was the one leading the charge to harass the SNL comedian Leslie Jones, so that's why he got banned.
In that failed movie.
Right, the Ghostbusters movie. But the fact is that you go and look at the you know, Tim Pool after this, or Joe Rogan's timeline, or anybody on the right, or Jordan Peterson, it's just... it's constant abuse.
Right. Well, but the idea of, like, well, they can't police that. It's like, well, if you can look that this one specific account keeps reporting posts and there's nothing you can do to move on these posts, then this person is either trying to harass them by reporting just nonsense posts. That's what I'm talking about.
You think there would be a way for them to have an algorithm where, okay, this person reports every other post, we're just going to ignore his reports, you know?
But this,
or just tell them, like, hey, this person is like, you may want to block them.
But this is where Tim Pool kind of failed. Tim Pool wanted total free speech, a total lack of censorship on the platform, but then he got mad that people were harassing him and they didn't do anything about it. You know, and so... there was a little bit of a breakdown where I don't want to be harassed, but why are you banning these people for harassment? You know, and so I think his point was more that it was a double standard.
Yeah, he was more mad at the hypocrisy of it. I think he would have been okay with it as long as it was equally enforced.
Right. You know, and they talked about Kathy Griffin giving the names of the Covington kids, and they said, well, we consider it, your name is public, your phone number is not. And so they said their main focus really is security. They want to make sure that if Harry gets on and starts saying mean things to me and continually says mean things to me, they don't care about that as much as if it looks like he's doxing me, he's putting out private information. You know, that rises to a different level for them where they will escalate action. And that's kind of their main focus.
I think people forget that Twitter is still a business. They have to make a profit at the end of the day. And I think if you allow some of this doxing to go on and you allow harassment to go on, Let's imagine it turns into the real world and something actually happens. Now, can Twitter get sued? I mean, are they liable? Yeah. You know, is the government going to come down on them saying, okay, you have not cleaned up your act. We have to come in and do it for you. So I think they have to walk a tightrope where, yeah, they want free expression. They want all this, you know, free speech. But then they still have to make a profit. They can't do that to their detriment to go out of business either or lose advertisement.
Yeah.
Well, and go ahead.
I was going to. Yeah, with that, and I wanted to go back and talk about the Tim Pool thing. It's like, yeah, you could also see the gaps in his also understanding of his political philosophy.
Yeah.
Tim Pool is, like, incredibly intelligent. He can think things through logically, and you can tell, like, through that conversation, he was trying to have his cake and eat it, too, mm-hmm, on his, like, his left-leaning, you know, his left-leaning stuff. And he's like, well, I want this for you, but I need you to be regulated, but I don't want you to control, mm-hmm, everything. Yeah. I'm like, are you not seeing what you're doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I had trouble following him too because, yeah, he always talks about he's in favor of regulation because everyone accuses him of being alt-right because it's for free speech. But he's like, no, look, I want regulation. I want government intervention. But then he's like, but not in this specific way. I want. So it was, for me, it was very hard to find out what exactly he wanted the government to be involved in Twitter. And even he said at one point he doesn't want the government to regulate Twitter because he's saying it's going to be a sledgehammer and they're just going to ruin it. So I had trouble kind of following exactly what he thought the government's role.
Like most people
was
on the left, he doesn't understand how bureaucracy, yeah, actually works when this legislation is enacted.
But the thing is, I think he does, but he hopes it for it can always be better, but it's, yeah, never that better.
Right.
And I think that him saying it out loud, he just can't really, like, okay, I want it, but I don't know want it because I can't have no, like, he has no cases to base off and when it actually has made anything better.
Well, yeah, what he came down to was he wants the Twitter to enforce speech as if it's the government. So, in, mm-hmm, other words, any speech protected by the government should be allowed on Twitter. So, like, I can go to someone and just say all kind of slurs and threats to you as long as it's not, you know, escalating to the point of an actual physical threat.
Well, at, mm-hmm, certain points, he got mad at them for having the power that they have.
Right.
Yeah, and then there's another problem, too. I was pretty upset at him. Mm-hmm.
But then he didn't want them to have any power, but then, like, yeah, it, I don't, and I just, I, right, think he, I don't think he went into it with the, like, I went into it to listen, and every time Jack Dorsey talked, I was engaged. Like, mm-hmm, every time that guy talked, I hadn't thought of it. I haven't, mm-hmm, thought of it that way. Like, it could have been about an hour shorter if we had just edited, right, Tim a little bit. You know, every time Vidya spoke, it was sort of like
clinical,
circular bullshit.
Well, she was the corporate answer. This is the answer, right, I'm supposed to give. So that way, you know, right, she's the face of the corporation. And I think, well, Jack, it's his baby. So he's, right, the one that created it. He has the most skin in the game, yeah, as anyone does. So I think when he talks, he knows everything from every angle because he knows that if he's not managing this company properly, he has more to lose than anyone. So I think when he talks, you know, he made the best points, I would say.
He thinks about it philosophically. Were you surprised at how little he knows about the things that we know so much about?
a little, no, bit, but then you pointed out that, I mean, this guy is a successful guy. Then, you know, I find out he's the CEO of Cash App and, mm-hmm, of Square, yeah, and Twitter. Yep. So this guy's working 80 hours a week, I imagine. So, yeah, for him, he probably doesn't know all the intersexual, you know, feminist rungs of everything, right, and he's just trying to run a business from.
He doesn't. It seemed to me that he didn't understand. When a guy's busy like that and they're in charge, the underlings kind of take that for granted, and they craft things in the way that they think it, in the way that they think it ought to be run.
Mm-hmm.
And I get the sense that the security team that Vidya runs really thinks about things from that intersectional leftist perspective, and, mm-hmm, they're kind of going about it a certain way, and it may be in conflict a little bit with the way that he thinks about it, which is we're an open speech platform. But, you know, she to me was kind of like, you know, when you're spinning the boss a little bit, you're in your year-end review, and you're going, this is why I'm banning this person because they did this, 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 and you're very firm. But then when, like, you hit them with a counterexample, like in Alabama, when they used the platform to do the same exact thing that they had banned other people for, she didn't know the guy's name. He didn't know the guy's name. They didn't really have the details that Tim Pool had. They didn't have really any good answers on any of the counterexamples of the leftist using the platform in the same way that the conservatives were using it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the left, well, the way they use it, they get by with a lot of stuff and the right does not. And she kind of had like soft pedal answers, like, well, here's why this. And so I just,
thanks
I felt,
for her feedback.
I felt like she was kind of spinning us. Whereas with him, and I think this clip, this will be a little longer, but I think we, it's so easy for us just to say, and I blocked somebody with the at collapsitarian. I just like, I'd never have seen this guy and I don't want to engage with him ever again. I can just tell he didn't even say anything bad. It's just you see the attitude, like they always glorify anger or negativity in their bio. And you're just like, you know what? You and I are not going to get along. I don't want you in my world. Goodbye. Which is what adults should do. Mm-hmm. Instead of saying this person shouldn't be on the platform, you just block them. That's how it works. Like,
mute.
I don't need to tell him how to think. I just don't need to be involved in it. You know, it's like, oh, I said that about him being successful. He goes, is he successful? I was like, he's worth billions of dollars. He started in a garage in Missouri. Yes.
If he's not successful, I have no chance.
Right.
Well, listen, success is subjective. So,
right,
I mean,
right.
By your definition, I mean,
you're successful because you're berating a D-list podcaster on Twitter, Mr. Success.
We're finally D-level?
Oh, easily, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
nice.
We're like at least second tier now. Like me and Austin Peterson talked to him. We were Instagram DMing today. I was in his DMs, so he said he liked our memes. So that, I mean, that's D-list at least.
Big deal.
They notice us. Yeah.
Wow.
Matt Welch liked one of my tweets yesterday. Like, I'm getting too famous for you people.
Nice.
And I heard you were on the Friends Against Government podcast. That's pretty awesome.
The Fagcast, yes. but I have a bone to pick with them, Mike. Uh-oh. They aren't giving me enough credit for turning them into what they've become. Mm. I have made them. They're becoming successful because of me, and they're not giving me the props that are due.
They're getting too big for their britches,
you
think?
That's exactly right. So I helped you up the ladder, and when you get to my rung, I'm going to smack you off, Burden Carr. They have a very funny podcast. Go check it out. Let's see. What was I saying? So Jack Dorsey kind of illustrated the problem that he has. And I think as libertarians and as free speech advocates, and we see people getting banned and we see in our echo chambers everybody getting riled up, it's easy to go, grab your pitchforks and torches and let's burn down Jack Dorsey. But I think it should be appreciated that Dorsey did this, because I can tell you, working in corporations and working in PR, not one PR person, lawyer, overthinker in the corporations, shareholders, board member, none of them wanted him to go on Joe Rogan with Tim Pool. They don't want him going on Sam Harris. They don't want him going on Sean Hannity. He went on Sean Hannity's show to talk about this stuff. Twitter is the only platform that didn't ban Alex Jones outright. Now, they talk about why they banned Alex Jones, and it was total nonsense. Which you can hear, she's just spinning. Mm-hmm. But Dorsey, I think, really does take a lot of this stuff seriously, which you'll hear in this. But there's also the other angle of the sheer scope of the challenge that they have. And I think if you think about central planning, and we're going to control the world, and we're going to control thought, we're going to control government, I want you to, in this answer, to think about how possible that might be for our friends who want central planning. So this is 1 hour and 26 minutes in.
And it's easy to communicate, especially when you only have 280 characters, that there is a class of individual in this country. I think you mentioned on, was it Sam Harris, that the left, these left liberal journalists only follow each other?
Yeah, in the run-up to the 2016 election.
That's Dorsey. Yeah.
And so, that's, I mean, I still believe that to be true, and I've worked in these offices.
It has changed. They've done the study again, the visualization, and now there is a lot more cross-pollination. But what we saw is folks who were reporting on the left end of the spectrum mainly followed folks on the left, and folks on the right followed everyone. Right.
What you were talking about earlier, that there's these bubbles.
There's bubbles, and we've helped create them and maintain them.
So here's what ends up happening, and this is one of the big problems that people have with this story particularly. You have a left-wing activist who works for NBC News. I'm not accusing you of having read the article. He spends a day lobbying to Twitter, saying, "Guys, you have to do this. You have to make these changes." The next day, he writes a story saying that 4chan is organizing these harassment campaigns and death threats. And while 4chan was doing threads about it, you can't accuse 4chan simply for talking about it, because Reddit was talking about it too, as was Twitter. So then the next day, after he published his article, now he's getting threats. And then Twitter issues a statement saying, "We will take action." And to make matters worse, when John Levine, a writer for The Wrap, got a statement from one of your spokespeople saying, "Yes, we are banning people for saying learn to code," a bunch of journalists came out and then lied, I had no idea why, saying this is not true, this is fake news. Then a second statement was published by Twitter saying it's part of a harassment campaign. And so then the mainstream narrative becomes, oh, they're only banning people who are part of a harassment campaign. But you literally see legitimate, high-profile individuals getting suspensions for joining in on a joke.
Oh, there for sure probably mistakes in there. I don't think that any of us are claiming that we got this 100% right.
And probably our team having a lack of context into actually what's happening as well. And we would fully admit we probably were way too aggressive when we first saw this as well, and made mistakes.
I hope this clarifies then. You have situations like this where you can see, you know, this journalist, I'm not going to name him, but he routinely has very like left-wing, I don't want to use overtly esoteric words, but intersectional dogmatic points of view, right? So this is
considered, what does that mean?
So like intersectional feminism is considered like a small ideology. People refer to these groups as the regressive left or the identitarian left. These are basically people who hold views that a person is judged based on the color of their skin instead of the content of their character. So you have the right-wing version, which is like the alt-right, the left-wing version, which is like intersectional feminism is how it's typically referred to. So you'll see people say things like, you know, when they rag on white men, or when they say like white feminism, these are signals that they hold these particular views. And these views are becoming more pervasive. So what ends up happening is you have a journalist who clearly holds these views. I don't even want to call him a journalist. He writes extremely biased and out of context story. Twitter takes action in response, seemingly in response. Then we can look at what happens with Oliver Darcy at CNN. He says, you know.
Now, that's an incredibly important thing that he just said. That is the pattern. That the social media companies are responding to bad press because they are stockholder corporations. And when Variety, which we'll talk about in a moment, writes an article about YouTube alt-right trolls like Joe Rogan and Tim Pool, they start taking action on them. And that's the pattern. It is Media Matters puts out the research, which we saw with Tucker Carlson. Mm-hmm. Then all the clickbait mills pick it up. And we've said this forever. If you've listened to the program for any length of time for the last couple of years, you hear the pattern. The clickbait mills, like Daily, on the right, Daily Caller, Daily Wire. On the left, Huffington Post, The Wrap, any of these things. But, I mean, I would even include, The Atlantic or venerated media establishments, or the New York Times, they start writing things as if this is the truth. And it's basically just one person on Twitter or Media Matters or one liberal group or person pushing, like Ben Shapiro when he gave his comments at the Right to Life rally. One guy on Twitter who has 70,000 followers and he's a hardcore leftist edited the video to make Ben Shapiro look bad, and the press just parroted it and made it look like he actually said what he said. And then you get the CEO like Jack Dorsey sitting in front of Lester Holt, and Lester Holt is basically just reading the Media Matters press release going, "Do you agree with this?" And the out of context information never actually reaches Jack Dorsey. It's just, well, we got to do something about this. Look at all this bad press I read in USA Today, all these bad things, and this is a problem. It's the media that is actively distorting. And Oliver Darcy, who used to work for Glenn Beck at The Blaze, used to work for The Daily Caller and Tucker Carlson, once just wrote glowingly of freedom of speech, has been the main person pushing for anybody on the right to get kicked off of the platform. Him and little Brian Stelzer get together on Sundays and reliable sources and just try to knock out their competition at Fox and knock out the competition in the new media. And so that's who he's talking about. We've talked about little Oliver Darcy repeatedly.
You know, the people at CPAC, the conservatives are gullible, eating red meat from grifters, among other things, disparaging comments about the right. And he's the one who's primarily advocating for the removal. I hope this clarifies then. You have situations like this where you can see, you know, this journalist, I'm not going to name him, but he routinely has very like left-wing, I don't want to use overtly esoteric words, but intersectional dogmatic points of view, right? So this is
considered, what does that mean?
So like intersectional feminism is considered like a small ideology. People refer to these groups as the regressive left. Or
we jump backwards, but I wanted you to hear them not know what intersectional means. Because, Mike, I think that kind of that blows apart. That wasn't staged. I think that genuinely blows apart the idea that they're all just leftists sitting there going, well, we're just talking to our friends over at the SPLC and we're like they bring up the Southern Poverty Law Center, and she's like, her face like twists like gross. No, yeah. You know, I don't think that we have had, after watching this, I don't think that we have had the right impression of these companies, at least Twitter anyways, where they're sitting there just going to the Southern Poverty Law Center website and then banning anybody that's Proud Boys. That's not how it is working. They don't even know what intersectional means.
This is not ideology. What I'm thinking, this is business. This is right. We're afraid we're losing advertisers. We're afraid we're losing customers. All this bad press. So we got to fix this so that way we can keep our money flowing and keep our customers coming. And I think that's the root cause of everything that's going on right here.
Right.
Or the identitarian left. These are basically people who hold views that a person is judged based on the color of their skin instead of the content of their character. So you have the right-wing version, which is like the alt-right, the left-wing version, which is like intersectional feminism is how it's typically referred to. So you'll see people say things like, you know, when they rag on white men, or when they say like white feminism, these are signals that they hold these particular views. And these views are becoming more pervasive. So what ends up happening is you have a journalist who clearly holds these views. I don't even want to call him a journalist. He writes extremely biased and out of context story. Twitter takes action in response, seemingly in response. Then we can look at what happens with Oliver Darcy at CNN. He says, you know, the people at CPAC, the conservatives are gullible, eating red meat from grifters, among other things, disparaging comments about the right. And he's the one who's primarily advocating for the removal of certain individuals who you then remove. And then when Kathy Griffin calls for doxing, that's fine. When this guy calls for the death of these kids, he gets a slap on the wrist. And look, I understand the context matters, but grains of sand make a heap. And eventually you have all of these stories piling up. And people are asking you why it only flows in one direction. Because I got to be honest, I'd imagine that calling for the death three times of any individual is a bannable offense, even without a warning. You just get rid of them. But it didn't happen, right? We see these, you know, people say men aren't women, though, and they get a suspension. We see people say the editor-in-chief of the Daily Caller may be the best example. Hashtag learn to code, quoting the Daily Show, and he gets a suspension. Threatening death and inciting death is a suspension, too. It feels like it's only going in one direction.
Yeah, I think we have a lot of work to do to explain more clearly when we're taking action and why, and certainly looking into any mistakes we may have made in those particular situations.
So would you guys agree that in tech, I think we can all agree this, I would hope you agree, tech tends to lean left? Like tech companies, Facebook, Twitter, Google?
I would be willing to bet that a conservative running a social network would not have a hate speech policy. I mean, you look at Gab and you look at Minds, and Minds not even right wing.
Right, they're not right wing at all. They just staunchly support free speech. And
right.
I don't think Gab is necessarily. I don't think the owner is necessarily right wing either.
I don't know much about him. I think he's like a libertarian. I don't want to.
I don't want to specify either. I don't know enough.
Yeah,
but I know that they're, when you read what they write, they're just staunchly committed to free speech. But they, you know, will stop doxing. They will do things to stop targeted harassment and doxing and things along those lines.
Sometimes slowly,
yeah.
Admittedly.
Yeah, admittedly. You know? But they just want an open platform. My point is that I think a lot of people that are on the right feel disenfranchised mm-hmm. by these platforms that they use on a daily basis. I don't know what the percentages are in terms of the number of people that are conservative that use Twitter versus the number of people that are liberal, but I would imagine it's probably pretty close, isn't it?
I don't know.
The numbers?
I don't know, because we don't ask people
we'd have to infer all that based on what they're saying, or because.
So let's not even go there. But the people that run, whether it's Google or Twitter or Facebook, any of these platforms, YouTube for sure, powerful leaning towards the left. Wouldn't we all agree to that?
Well, we don't ask our employees, but my guess is that many employees at tech companies are probably liberal.
It's really fascinating.
But I also think, you point out all the companies you mention are in exactly the same region as well.
Yes,
and we, all in we that. Do. You know, we do have the challenge of some monocultural thinking
yes.
as well. But I have said publicly that yes, we will have more of a liberal bias within our company. I said this to CNN.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that we put that in our rules.
Right. Hold on a second. Because what I'm getting at is that at some point in time, things have to get down to a human being looking and reviewing at cases. And if you guys are so left-wing in your staff and the area that you live in and all these things, things are almost naturally going to lean left. Is that fair to say?
If we were purely looking at the content, but a lot of this agent work is based on the behaviors, all the things that we've been discussing in terms of the context of the actual content itself.
Except that's what
the rules are.
Except the misgendering policy, right? So your rules do reflect your bubble, right? Go to middle America and go hang out at a conservative town. They're not going to agree with you. Your rules are based on your bubble in San Francisco or whatever city.
I'm from middle America. I'm from St. Louis, Missouri, and I hear the point. I definitely hear the point in terms of like us putting this rule forth, but we have to balance it with the fact that people are being driven away from our platform.
I hear you.
And they may not disagree. They may not agree with me on that, my folks from Missouri, but I think they would see some valid argument in what we're trying to do to, again, increase the opportunity for as many people as possible to talk. That's it. It's not driving the outcomes that you're speaking to.
Where do you stop? What community is and isn't deserving of protection? Are conservatives not deserving of protection for their opinions?
But I want to focus on individuals and increasing the absolute number of people who have opportunity to speak on the platform in the first place.
So then do you need a rule for body dysphoria? Do you need a rule for other kin? Right? You see what I'm asking you? You have a specific rule?
I see what you're asking. But like, and this came from a call and research. And there's disagreement as to whether this is the right outcome or not, and this is the right policy. And yes, our bias does influence looking in this direction, and our bias does take our bias does influence us putting a rule like this in place. But it is with the understanding of creating as much opportunity as possible for as many people to speak, based on the actual data that we see
right.
of people leaving the platform because of experiences they have.
So, why did your research stop there?
It hasn't stopped. Our rules aren't set in something that just stops and doesn't evolve. We're going to constantly question. We're going to constantly get feedback from people on every end of the spectrum of any particular issue and make changes accordingly.
And to your credit,
it doesn't stop.
And to your credit, I really do appreciate the fact that you're very open about that you have made mistakes and that you're continuing to learn and grow and that your company is reviewing these things and trying to figure out which way to go. And I think we all need to pay attention to the fact that this is a completely new road. This road did not exist 15 years ago. There was nothing there. That is a tremendous responsibility for any company, any group of human beings to be in control of public discourse on a scale unprecedented in human history. And that's what we're dealing with here. This is not a small thing. And I know people that have been banned, to them, this is a matter of ideology. This is a matter of this. This is a matter of that. There's a lot of debate.
This is when he starts to get into the scalability problem. So you kind of heard their take on, we want it to be on an individual basis. It's not about ideology. But then what I don't think that I appreciated was the astronomical scale of management that they have. I mean, I guess I kind of knew it. And in the early days, you're thinking about, the growth of these social networks. But when you're talking about something like Facebook, just the sheer size of Facebook is 2.5 billion people.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of servers that must take and the infrastructure. And Twitter has 4,000 people working on it. And it's, think of how many billions of tweets there are a day. And only 25% of their users are in the United States. And so then you add in the language problem of trying to monitor conversation in Indonesia, where they don't have, it's easy in America where they can monitor this stuff. But that's part of the problem that they talked about was just like the scalability and the languages. And like we can only do certain things in America because we can speak English and, only a small portion of a few hundred people are dedicated to the safety team and so they use algorithms and sometimes it gets it wrong and it's like so we kind of talked a little bit about the scale and then you start like my mind kind of wandered to And governments think that they can control the world. So keep that in the back of your mind as you listen to his answer here.
Being going on here, and this is one of the reasons why I wanted to bring you on, because Tim, because you know so much about so many of these cases, and so much because you are a journalist, and you're very aware of the implications and all the problems that have been that maybe have slipped through my fingers.
So I do want to make one thing really clear, though. I have a tremendous amount of respect and trust for you when you say you wanted to solve this problem simply because you're sitting here right now and these other companies aren't, right? Jack, you went on Sam Harris. You were on with GadSad. And that says to me a good faith effort to try and figure out how to do things right. Like, so as much as I'll apologize for getting kind of angry and being emotional because—
I don't see who's angry. Look, we also haven't been great at explaining our intent. And there's a few things going on. One— as Joe indicated, centralized global policy at scale is almost impossible. And we realize—
almost impossible, I would say. Completely impossible.
Different services have different answers to this. Reddit has a community-based policy where each topic, each subreddit has its own policy, and you know there's some benefit to that. So that's problem number one. We know that this very binary off- or on platform isn't right, and it doesn't scale, and it ultimately goes against our key initiative of wanting to promote more healthier conversation.
I just don't think that's what you're doing.
I hear you.
Yeah.
But like, so we're not done. We're not done. We're not finished with our work, and we need to. The reason I'm going on all these podcasts and having these conversations, and ideally Vidya's getting out there more often as well, because we don't see enough and hear enough for her. We need to have these conversations so we can learn. We can get the feedback and also pay attention to where the technology is going. Before the podcast, we talked a little bit about, and I talked about it on this our previous podcast and also Sam's, that technology today is enabling content to live forever in a way that was not possible before. You can say that everything on the internet lives forever, but that's not – it's generally not true because any host or any connection can take it down. The blockchain changes all of that. It can actually exist forever, permanently, without anyone being able to touch it, government, company, individual. And that is a reality that we need to pay attention to and really understand our value. And I believe a lot of our value in the future, not today, again, we have a ton of work, is to take a strong stance of like we are going to be a company that, given this entire corpus of conversation and content within the world, we're going to work to promote healthy public conversation. That's what we want to do. And if you disagree with it, you should be able to turn it off. And well, you should be able to access anything that you want, as you would with the internet. But those are technologies that are just in the formative stages and presenting new opportunities to companies like ours. And there's a ton of challenges with them and a ton of things that we've discussed over the past hour that it doesn't solve and maybe exacerbates, especially around things like election interference and some of the regulatory concerns that you're bringing.
So there's a few issues, right? Your definition of what is or isn't healthy, right?
Yes. And we want that to be public. Like we want that. We have four indicators right now that we're working on with an external lab. We want other labs to. We want to give it up, open source. Make sure that people can comment on it, that people can help us define it. We'll use that interpretation on our own algorithms and then push it. But that has to be open. That has to be transparent. Are we there today? Absolutely not. We're not there.
This course of action to me looks like a Fahrenheit 451 future where everything is so offensive, everything must be restricted. I see that's the path I see that you're on. You want to have a healthy conversation. You want to maximize the amount of people. That means you got to cut off all the tall grass and level everything out. So right. if you've decided that this one rule needs to be enforced because certain things are offensive.
No, but can I explain what health at least means to us in this particular case?
Yeah.
So like we talked a little bit about this on the previous podcast, but like we have four indicators that we're trying to define and try to understand if there's actually something there. One is shared attention. Is a conversation generally shared around the same objects or is it disparate? So like as we're having a conversation, the four of us are having a conversation, are we all focused on the same thing? Or is Joe on his phone, which you were earlier, or like whatever is going on? Because more shared attention.
He gets called out there, but Alex Jones was blowing him up, going, I didn't do anything that I said.
And we'll lead to healthier conversation. Number two is shared reality. not whether something is factual.
And then it goes into an ad. So you'll just have to – that was like hour, 1 hour and 40 minutes in if you want to continue on that. But because I don't want to bore you because you're here to hear us and not hear them. But I wanted you – like I feel like those two clips kind of give you the totality of the conversation. So you don't need to go watch all of it. But what did you guys hear in there that you were surprised by or kind of developed a thought?
The one – imagery that I got from it was the whole Fahrenheit 451.
Yeah.
If you haven't read the book, read it. It's pretty neat. That and Harrison Bergeron.
Just go watch the movie, the new movie with, I forget the actor's name, but it's really pretty good.
Yeah, Killmonger in it. no one? Oh, fine then. Screw it all, you guys. Yeah. But anyways, the idea that, like, if you think about it, like, at a Fahrenheit 451, what Twitter, like, kicks everyone out, everything's offensive, and then, like, you're banned, so everyone, like, instead of you have a book, you have a meme. This is your meme that you're bringing. So you got all these people out in the woods. It's like, you know, they've got their own little memes.
Right.
You know?
Basically, long story short,
Did I just spoil that book for people?
No, because it's a really good book. But long story short, technology basically takes over, and they start erasing literature, and they change books, and you can get an ebook, but the ebook has been censored by the central authority of kind of what the PC police find to be okay and acceptable, mm-hmm. and all the beauty, all the magic of everything is taken out of it, and there's these firefighters who go in and fight. Knowledge, basically. Yeah. So, I mean, I haven't read the book, but I watched the movie. I think it was on Showtime or Cinemax or HBO or something.
You only got a book you haven't read yet?
Yeah, right, but it was, I mean, you watch it and you go, it's not 1984. That's the future where everybody is so, they're watching their telescreens, mm-hmm. And that you're being fed from the central authorities what the proper information is. And then those who have the memes of knowledge, mm-hmm. The book Deuteronomy memes, they have the ability to people memorize books basically, so the knowledge is never forgotten. And mm-hmm. so, anyways, yeah.
You memorize the books, and that's why they can't burn it.
Yeah, but it's really of the dystopian novels. It's probably where we're going.
And a mix of Harrison Bergeron when they get everyone down to like an average.
Yeah.
And it seems like that's what public schools is doing to people, just bringing like the people who are really up there, bringing you down.
Right, right. What did you kind of take out of some of that?
You know, I'm not as pessimistic as you guys are, as Tim is, you know. I think technology is going to eventually free us and make a lot of government obsolete. And the big thing I'm taking from this is that Twitter is not censoring ideas. It's just targeted harassment. And
right.
And then Tim Pool's big thing as well, you consider misgendering someone targeted harassment. And
he brings up the Ben Shapiro example, who intentionally uses, well, I'm sorry, you have to, you're a biological man, so I consider you a man. I will use your pronouns to your face out of politeness, but Bruce Jenner is Bruce Jenner and not Caitlyn Jenner. And so he intentionally inflames that point, trying to dare mm-hmm. Twitter to remove him because he knows the reaction that would get from his following.
Well, I guess according to what they're saying, that just expressing that opinion is not bannable. It's just when you're talking to an individual. So
right.
If someone is like, look, I'm a woman now. And then if Ben Shapiro says, nope, I'm going to call you a he, I'm going to call you
right.
a man.
They
and
see then, that as targeted harassment.
That's harassment, you know.
Right.
And yeah, maybe, you know, some people wouldn't see it as harassment, but some people do. And I think harassment is in the ear of the beholder, so to mm-hmm. speak, you know, and again, Twitter's trying to look after their bottom line. And I think something he said too is that we looked into this high suicide rate in this community, and you know, we want to make sure we're not going to be a part of that. And I think as a human being, if you own a company and you're allowing a policy that may lead to someone to get harassed and then they end up killing themselves, that's obviously, you might feel horrible about that. I would, mm-hmm. you know,
right.
and then,
oh, yeah.
then the press would be terrible. I mean, there's, I don't know if you could get sued for something like that, but I'm sure some lawyer will try it out and
you
gotta fight
him
off.
You can get sued for anything.
Yeah, you gotta fight him off in court, and then so you know, and I think a lot of times these companies are afraid to talk about the bottom line because our culture is, you know, if you are kind of appealing to leftists, you can't talk about making a profit.
Right.
It's just, that's just, you know, horrible profit. You know, you got to talk about, oh, we're here for free speech for all people and blah, blah, blah. But really what I'm hearing is I want more customers and I want to go by the policy that will get me the most customers and that will drive away the least customers. And I think people that maybe are on the right, they're not going to be as sensitive to drive themselves off the platform as much, I think.
They're not as, they're not the predominant culture.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I saw someone post, I got all the way to the end of the Instagram stories today because I was, I had an hour and I was bored. So I was looking for memes for my Instagram story and wall. And, you know, I saw, there's this one feminist that is here locally that I'm friends with and like she always posts feminist stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she posted something about a stripper and the greatest revolution is like throwing it in their face or something along those lines. And I kind of went, what is countercultural about being a stripper? It, you know, or like what is countercultural about being a member of the LGBT community at this point? And, like maybe in your local community, if you're in the Deep South, maybe that's countercultural for the people that you're around. But for the media that we bathe in, for the overarching culture, it has in the last 10 years become predominantly left, secular. It's become anti-religious, you know, pro-sexual freedom. Like the things that when we were in high school, you know, those of us who are in our 30s that were countercultural, like I went to the pride parades in the 2000s because it was countercultural. It's not that, like going to a pride parade now is not countercultural. Like I just don't think that people of the left really understand that they're now in charge.
and it's
not the Christian conservatives like when we were kids. You're the man that you're fighting. You look ridiculous because you're the man now.
Yeah, exactly. I was a Howard Stern fan my whole life, and I'm your age, so I remember the 2000s, George Bush era, after the wardrobe malfunction, the Super Bowl. The FCC went down hard at him, gave him all kind of fines. You had every family organization, you had every religious right organization coming down.
I work for a show that had a lot of risque comedy bits that were, you know, kind of your typical boomer male, boobs, butts, beard, like, you know, sex, this Playboy, that kind of stuff. And, you know, we in that era, I was not there, obviously, but after Janet Jackson, you couldn't play a lot of the bits because the conservatives considered it too dirty. The Christian right considered it too dirty. We can't play those bits now because the progressive left thinks that it's too inappropriate, you know, in the Me Too era, which I kind of in some ways agree with some of it, but like, it shifted. Like in the last 25 years, it's totally shifted.
Yeah, big time. And you know, this is why the worst thing we can do is tell the government to level the playing field.
Right.
Because if you're on the right and you think, well, they're going to level it for me because I'm being oppressed today. I mean, it's going to, 10 years from now, it's going to flip around again. It's going to flip around again. And we're all going to be oppressed. And especially libertarians and anti-war people, we're the ones that we're going to get the boot either way. You know, we're going to get...
If you're anti-state.
We're screwed either way. So for us, anyone on our team to say, we need to get regulation because it's become a utility at this point. Social media is dominating so much. We're going to be first one screwed.
Right.
We're just done.
Yeah. And that's like the worst thing to do is to get the government into social media, into regulating, because that secures the power of Twitter and Facebook and Instagram.
Oh, well, that too.
Yeah.
Then no competition will come in. I mean, think about if you had to get a license from the government to operate a social media platform, you'll have to be a multimillionaire to begin with just to start one, as opposed to being in your garage like Twitter and Facebook and these guys just are college kids with no money and they just started something up. You won't be able to do that once the government starts regulating and having licenses, and they're going to control the algorithms now.
Right.
Yeah. The other thing that you were just going back to your point, I remember going to like my first Pride parade, and that was like, it was very counterculture
making a statement as a person from a conservative background, a Christian background. It was me making a statement as a libertarian that I stand with this community.
Yeah.
And now that doesn't make the same statement.
Nope.
You know what I mean? Like it doesn't, it just doesn't like it's if it, it, and I think that's why Gen Z I think is more conservative. They're the most conservative generation since the greatest generation, the World War II generation, because to be a Catholic and to be a Ben Shapiro fan is to be countercultural in schools. Like my 13-year-old cousin that does the podcast, look up Politicast. He will be thrilled if he got some subscribers on YouTube. I got him like – I doubled him to like 18 subscribers, and he could not believe that. So Politicast, it's my little cousin. He's 13, and he's been taking my advice. He's a very smart kid. I tell him, just do the news. Don't do opinion. You're not going to think the same thing in 25 years, and so you don't want this hanging over you. But it's very cute what he does. But he has like his little Ben Shapiro sweatshirt and his little Ben Shapiro cup, and he has like two sets in his room that he's built. It's very cute. But you know, he wants to read Ben Shapiro books, and he wants to read, you know, he just finished Basic Economics by Thomas Sowell, I'm like, I can't even get through that, you know? So he's a very smart kid.
Yet you have the Bible next to your toilet.
Yeah. Well, it's been a long 2 weeks, Harry. So when you have food poisoning, not just the Bible, I've got the ESV study Bible on the toilet. And if you're a Christian, you know, that's some hardcore reading. There's a lot of articles in there. But no, I think like, you know, he's very thirsty for knowledge because he's so bathing in a culture that he wants to rebel against. And what better way than to read Thomas Sowell, to read the Bible, to go to Mass, to go, you know, and I just look at him saying to his teachers, like, I want to read this, and why aren't you letting me read this?
Right.
You know, and the easy cop-out for everybody is, oh, no politics, no politics. But, like, if you're reading The Handmaid's Tale, this is where the left got really smart. I want you to go to Wikipedia, not you guys, but when you get some time, look up critical theory. And just research the background of critical theory. It is basically Marxists knew that after the Soviet Union, economically, they couldn't make it work. So what they did is they created critical theory. They were in these Ivy League schools, and they said, let's re-examine with a critical eye all the classics and the Bible and all the institutions of Western society and the Western canon from a Marxist critique. Let's use culture to start eroding those values and reinterpreting things from a postmodern view, which says whatever you think it says is what it says. And when you watch the Oscars now, you see critical theory en masse. You see, you know, you see the Marxist ideology and people promoting it without really knowing what they're doing. Like, if you understand critical theory and you understand Saul Alinsky, you understand everything that drives you crazy about the media, about Hollywood, about Democratic politicians, about their advocacy groups that are supporting them. You just see the useful idiots that don't understand what they're doing. They're reinterpreting society in a way that those of us in the middle America, you guys may not agree with me, but you know, like, I think we don't have to. Like, that's the beauty of individualism. I can live from the Christian ethic, and you can live from the postmodern ethic, and you can live from the Stoic ethic, and you can live from the Jewish ethic. You can live from the Wiccan ethic. Like, you can choose how you want to live as long as we get along with each other. It's a mutual cooperation. We respect each other. I treat you with dignity. I don't hit you. You don't hit me. You don't put a gun to my head and say, nope, you need to be a Muslim now. Like, that's what libertarianism is about. And what critical theory teaches is, no, you need to do this or we're going to shame you because you're a heretic. Like, it's we're really at a point where there was an article recently. This is going to be the next big thing. You watch. Mark my words. The things we say here 2 years later, you start seeing it everywhere in the news. The new big thing is that if you don't want to have sex with a trans person or date a man, if you're a man, you are homophobic or transphobic. It's not about getting me to kiss a guy. It is about getting me to publicly say that I will not kiss a guy or go on a date with a trans person. Because me saying something that is countercultural like that identifies to everybody else that I'm a heretic. It's about heretical thought. And so the scourges of Twitter, they don't really care about defending the rights of the people that they say they're defending. They really care about identifying heretics and then burning them at the stake. It's the same brain as the Spanish Inquisition. It's the same strain of thinking as the Salem witch trials. It's just wrapped up in identity politics now. You know, and so Jack doesn't understand at what level his company participates in that mob mentality, I don't think.
Well, we're going to need the human race to want to, you know, to jump the shark and finally start, you know, dating outside their comfort zone, having sex without their comfort zone. Because when the humanity
if
becomes,
you're having sex with me, you're having sex outside of your comfort zone. I believe me. Well, I'm a personality choice.
Well, the people that you have sex with, they're doing humanity a great service.
Right. Otherwise, I'm cranky.
Yeah, because when humans become a multi, you know, planet species and we run into, you know, like, who knows what out there, you know, we're going to have to bang them. Okay, what are we right. fine? You know, and we've got to be comfortable right. with that.
You're gonna have.
I'm definitely okay with that.
Half Romulan, mm-hmm. half human.
Right.
Yeah,
right. You know, I think you know Spangle settling down with a nice Klingon woman. You know, would be good for you.
Does it have to be Klingon? I don't know that I could get past the forehead.
Otherwise, you're wrong.
I've always
you have to say you were willing to bang a Klingon person.
I have always enjoyed a distinct nose, but that goes too far. No, but do you understand my point?
It's
that it is about identifying who is not down for the cause.
And the scary thing is you say that, you can see the rumblings of that coming, mm-hmm. you know, because it's starting. It's like they're testing it.
Yeah.
You know, they're bringing it up to some people.
It starts in Boston or mm-hmm. or at mm-hmm. college campuses. And then eventually it rolls out because it catches on like a virus in people who just live by groupthink. Which is what a lot of these leftist mobs do, and a lot of conservative mobs, too. I think there's a lot of and libertarian mobs. Like, that's part of what our Bill Weld episode was about, was the NPCs in the libertarian movement. Mm-hmm. You can have very fundamental disagreements with Bill Weld, but if you don't want to listen to what Bill Weld had to say, you're an NPC. Like, I'm just virtue signaling so all the other Mises Caucus guys like me.
Yeah.
You know? Right. Like, I'm just going to support Bill Weld so the Pragmatic Caucus is down with me. Like, that's – you're an NPC. You're not a critical thinker, and I think we have to be better. The other thing that I saw in that was just the scale of it, you know, and he took some pushback from some people on my social media by saying we're not finished yet. We haven't figured all this out yet. And people were like, well, why not? And this was from a person who – Doug Carr, who's been on the show, talked about social media, said, that's thoroughly unconvincing. I go, Doug, you're in tech marketing technology. Like, you're in tech.
Mm-hmm.
You work in IT. You know, you look at Weird Libertarians and just the evolution of Weird Libertarians. March 8th was our 7th anniversary. So we're officially 7 now. So we're one dog year. And look at the evolution. We're on our 5th generation of co-hosts.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know Harry when I started this program, you know, and yeah. Harry's here every week now. When you work on a tech project, when you work on something, it constantly evolves.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Well, they have to evolve because eventually competition will. I mean, if they are going to take this to the conclusion that Tim Pool thinks they're going to take it to, they're going to kick a lot of people off and they're mm-hmm. going to lose a lot of customers. And then someone else is going to soak up those customers.
Yeah.
And eventually a better platform will emerge, providing the government stays out of the way and doesn't, you know,
yeah.
protect the monopoly. So, yeah, I mean, they have to evolve and they have to constantly get better and constantly seek new customers. Otherwise, they will die. Like every major company in every industry that was a giant at one time that you could swear, this guy will never fall. 10 years later, they're filing bankruptcy. GM was the biggest corporation in the world. They filed bankruptcy, and they would be gone today if the government didn't bail them out. They'd be off the face of the earth forever.
Right.
They need to go away. So does Dodge and their crappy transmissions. They all just need to go away, even though Dodge just now started buying Toyota transmissions. Good move. But
so they're evolving. There you go.
But like then you got what the Facebook does is they constantly keep buying out their competition. So Twitter's evolving and keep getting and doing different things, while Facebook is just like, wow, that's a threat. Buy them while they're small.
Yeah.
Well, that works until it doesn't work because, okay, I'm going to start a new company. You give me $10 million 2 years later, then I'll start a new – you know. So eventually you run out of money when there's so many more competitors coming up.
That's why they're like – that's why Facebook went, please regulate us.
Yeah.
Because they know they can't keep doing that.
Yeah, I think Facebook is way scarier than Twitter, because if you notice, when Zuckerberg came in to the congressional testimony, a few months later, all these libertarian pages got booted off the platform, especially anti-war pages. Mm-hmm. And not just like sort of right-wing pages, but the anti-police or the police accountability pages.
Fringier.
Yeah.
You look at the anti-vax people being kicked off.
Yeah, and you would think a lot of this would be good for leftists. You would think police accountability pages that expose the police brutality would be, you know, something that would be good from that point of view, but they're more about the government, I think, than sort of culture.
So let me go ahead.
Oh, one thing I was going to say, like, that was also to your point that Zuck is more scarier, is that, you know, we know that Facebook records everything that you type into Facebook. They record that. Even if you go back and delete it, they still record it and keep that. Facebook has gone on occasion and, like, it says, no, read your private messages. We read your private messages and serve you ads based off your private messages.
Yeah.
Twitter goes like, no, we don't do that.
Yeah, you know, no, I don't think
we have that capability.
I think Facebook is clearly – Facebook and YouTube, you know, which is owned by Google, are the two biggest violators. I think Facebook is easily the creepiest.
Mm-hmm.
It is the unhealthiest, yes. I think, in terms of our brains. Yep. Both Instagram and Facebook are the most addictive.
Mm-hmm.
I think they are just – they're bad actors, you know, and they were they have been my favorite for a long time. But I find myself using these platforms a lot less. I use Instagram probably too much, but that's just because I'm searching for memes for business.
Yeah.
But there are times where you wake up after an hour and you just kind of go, wow, I have been looking at my phone for an hour now. You know, and it's hard to break out of that sometimes.
Yeah. And that's one good thing with the newest version of the Android operating system, is that it alerts you. You can leave a time alert on apps.
Yeah.
So, like, if you've been in an app for too long, you'll beep, 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 hey, got this app.
I turned it off because it was annoying me. It kept telling me I had to lock the... So, Zero Hedge. Do you guys know Zero Hedge?
Yep.
How would you characterize Zero Hedge?
You know, I don't follow them, but I see a lot of their stuff. And I would say they're more... They're kind of like a Joe Rogan. They'll entertain a lot of different fringe type of things, and they'll do a lot of libertarian types things, and they'll do things that Alex Jones might talk about. And,
right.
And, you know, some of the stuff I'll read, it looks pretty ridiculous, but they're kind of, I would say their worldview is pretty interesting, and if you think about it critically, there's a lot of good stuff you can pull out of it, and you can kind of put the...
Yeah, they're business focused.
Yeah,
and they'll cover fringy stuff within the business world. They're the anti CNBC. It's not corporate. It's not sanitized. Well, Zero Hedge, over the weekend, we were surprised to learn, this is Zero Hedge writing this, that some readers were prevented by Facebook when attempting to share Zero Hedge articles. Subsequently, if it emerged, virtually every attempt to share or merely mention an article, including in private messages, would be actively blocked by the world's largest social network, with the explanation, the link you tried to visit goes against our community standards. We were especially surprised by this action, as neither prior to this seemingly arbitrary act of censorship nor since were we contacted by Facebook with an explanation of what, quote, community standard had been violated or what particular filter or article had triggered the blanket rejection of all Zero Hedge content. To be sure, as for-profit enterprise with its own unique set of corporate ethics, Facebook has every right to impose whatever filters it desires on the media shared on its platform. It is entirely possible that one or more posts was flagged by Facebook's triggered readers who were merely alerted a censorship algo which blocked all content. Alternatively, it is possible that Facebook simply decided to no longer allow its users to share our content in retaliation for our extensive coverage of what some have dubbed the platform's, quote, many problems, including chronic privacy violations, mass abandonment by younger users, its gross and ongoing misrepresentation of fake users, ironically, in retrospect, its systematic censorship and backdoor government cooperation. Those are just links from the past few weeks. Unfortunately, as noted above, we still don't know what event precipitated this censorship, and any attempts to get feedback from the company within the $500 billion market cap have gone unanswered. We would welcome this opportunity to dialogue with them. So, you know, when we did a Facebook Live with the Liberty Meme guys, after that banning of 600 and then 800 pages, mostly with a libertarian or anti-state bent, I did a Facebook Live interview with Peter Gay. I posted both of them, you know, and I was on their platform criticizing them. And then lo and behold, they find me saying a slur, an anti-Semitic slur, where basically I said to someone 7 days prior on As the We Are Libertarians page, I had said, you're basically making the argument that a good German would make, that it maybe these Jews are a problem, which was a historical argument basically saying, like, don't you understand that if you see tyranny, you should act on it instead of making an excuse for it? But I did it in what I thought was a more provocative way. I was not calling anyone anything. I was not smearing anyone of any particular faith in any way, shape, or form. And yet I was banned for 30 days after having only one previous ban of 1 day. So I should have gotten another one or maybe a 3 day ban. But 30 days took me out before the midterms and really drove down the usage of Facebook for both me and We Are Libertarians right before the 2018 midterms. So I have no doubt that they scanned my page. They scanned everything that I've done looking for some reason to ban me that fit their community standards because I was on their platform complaining about them. You know, a lot of companies do this. PayPal's famous for it. You know, we love PayPal here. We use PayPal.
PayPal's great.
We would never say anything bad about PayPal. We use it. But
except when they do bad stuff.
No, they never do anything bad. Shut your mouth.
Sorry.
PayPal banned Big League Politics Luke Roughling 2 weeks ago from its platform mere months after he exposed the online payment processor's funding of an illegal immigration group that has provided services to those that encourage illegal immigration. He did not use his PayPal account to receive donations, payments, or conduct business as a reporter, but simply used it to expedite payments and increase security on various websites. They say that the termination of his account was decided on his activities relating to the usage of PayPal security. So basically he did an expose on the conservative leaning site Big League Politics about PayPal and he was denied service. Joe Biggs and several other folks who are connected to InfoWars or some other quote fringy sites have had their Chase accounts terminated. I use both PayPal and Chase to conduct everything. You know, I'm a big fan of both. I love both. I would never criticize either. but I think it's troubling when we get into a place where we're now messing with people's money over their speech.
It's really scary because banks, they're not independent at all. I mean, they're partners in government, and nowadays their early cash is almost the way of the past, and they're trying to make a cashless society. So, I mean, once you can control someone's entire, you know, paycheck and their whole all their finances, now you really have them, you know, by the balls. I mean, what can you do then once you have no bank account?
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. Because, even more businesses are going without giving actual physical checks. It's direct deposit or nothing. Yeah. Or they'll give you like a net spend card.
Yeah, well, it saves them money that way too. And it's convenient for most people.
Yeah, and that drives back to the point of the real reason for cryptocurrency is the idea to be able to transfer, just wealth between individuals for services rendered.
Without corporation or government at all getting involved.
Correct. Yeah, you can just do it. Yeah.
That's why secretly, whenever I hear these PayPal things, these bank bans, I feel bad for the individual that suffers through this ban. But then I'm thinking like, all right, you know, one more new one on board, one more nail in the coffin for the old system. They're playing themselves in the long run.
Yeah, and that's why they're trying to get on the crypto bandwagon, but they're not understanding. It's like people may use them in the future for cold storage of offline wallets and stuff like that, or just to hold different stuff. But that's about it. Like to them, because they can't. If they do fractionals, or there's some. I'm not going to get into that. But you're right. They are just playing themselves because you can have transactions merchant to merchant without actually having to carry the cash with with cryptocurrency, cutting them out. And that's the whole. That's the biggest point of crypto is like I'm cutting you out and then you cannot know the transactions that I've been transacting. So if I want to go and donate to antiwar.com, I don't have to worry about the FBI knowing that I donated to antiwar.com and getting on some sort of list.
Right. Continuing on in our update here, if you search, this is from The Verge, if you search Brie Larson on YouTube a couple of days ago, the top search results were calls for a boycott of Captain Marvel and angry rants about Larson's involvement in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. With one small change, YouTube made all of that disappear. Isn't Marvel Disney?
Yes.
Okay. Just let that sink in.
Everything's Disney, though.
Right. This week, YouTube recategorized Brie Larson as a newsworthy search item. That does one very important job. It makes the search algorithm surface videos from authoritative sources on a subject. Instead of videos from individual creators, YouTube responds with videos from Entertainment Tonight, ABC, Disney, CBS, CNN, and other news outlets. This was rolled out in October 2017 following mass criticism over YouTube search favoring conspiracy videos, that blanket term that just automatically makes you unlistenable, over actual news after a mass shooting at a Las Vegas music festival. The change from the algorithmic search that comes from labeling an event as news can be seen below in this Verge article from March 7th. Shows exactly how that has been done. And I've shown this in a video when I was prepping for our Venezuela episode. When you search Venezuela or Maduro, you get the Deutsche Welle service. You get Agent Press service from France. You get NPR. You get BBC. You get RT. Government-owned news agencies presenting information. You get ABC. You get CNN. You get, you know,
CBC.
You don't get I finally found Jimmy Dore because I had to find him, and he had, of course, on Abby Martin, who draws a paycheck from the Venezuelan government. So she wasn't exactly pro-America or anti-Maduro. Mm-hmm. But you don't see in the search results for Venezuela anything coming from alternative sources. You only see what we don't want to see from YouTube, which is what we can see on our television. You want to see alternative information. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the point of YouTube, is you're an alternative.
Correct, yeah. And you have to go, and your subscription don't do anything, and you have to go ring that stupid bell, and they bury a lot of Mox News. I don't know if you guys ever watch any of
I used to see Mox News. Yeah. I don't anymore.
Yeah, a.k.a. the C-SPAN junkie. A lot of the time, like, if you see me post videos of like that of just news articles or C-SPAN, this comes from Mox News. I try to donate to him at least once a month. He's a really cool guy, but he does all the work of watching C-SPAN all hours, recording it and pumping it onto YouTube. Really cool guy. But his stuff will get, like, depending on what he's picked up, like a news result, it'll just get buried. And just kept, he actually had his channel, like, had several different channels just nuked a couple of times. We're talking about, yeah, just archives of news footage that's easy to accessible, just nuked.
Yeah.
So I find this interesting because the whole reason YouTube became popular in these is because you got information you didn't get on your TV. This is something that's different and new. And now that they're big and they're making money and they're taking money from corporations to put their websites on top first, you wonder if there's going to be just a new platform coming up that caters to that, you know, those alternatives. And
nobody's going to do the alternative thing. Mm-mm. I'll tell you why. Mm-mm. I don't give a fuck. Like, I don't know how often I turn on my Twitter or my Facebook app, and I just go, don't care. Like, whenever I see two specific congresswomen, I am now hiding the pages, even if it's reason. I just don't care anymore. I don't want to see them. I don't care that Donald Trump signed a Bible. I don't care. Like, my whole attitude has shifted over the last couple months, because I'll tell you why. The Covington kid thing really reprioritized things for me, because I was getting too into the news cycle. And after that, I realized I violated my own value system. I need to take a look at how I'm viewing the news, how I'm viewing social media, how much time I'm spending on it. And I have spent 2 months really kind of away from it all. And I need to keep it up, because I've kind of been seduced a little bit over the last few days as I've kind of been prepping a little bit to see what people are talking about. And I just got to be honest, like, I just don't care about what most of the stuff I see on, like, I just don't care what Ocasio-Cortez's Green New Deal. I'll do a program about it. But at the end of the day, the Green New Deal is not going to happen. The unions came out today, which they play a central role in, and said this is BS, no thank you. Mm-hmm. It's done now. Like what Ocasio-Cortez says and things is ultimately irrelevant in the grand scheme of politics. So I don't know about you guys, but I just trying to have a healthier relationship with social media, and it was the Covington kid stuff that really changed it for me. And I just and what that really means is I just don't care. Don't care. Like, literally, I want you to do this exercise and report back to me, not just you guys, but the listeners. When you get on social media or you read the news, ask yourself, do I care about this? Does this matter? Or just look at it and go, don't care. Don't care. See how many times you say don't care? It's almost every post. Because mm-hmm. when your priorities are straight, when you're focusing on your mental life, your physical life, your spiritual life, your emotional life, your family, your job, like you're putting those priorities ahead of social media, you really stop caring about most of the news. You just open it up and you go, I don't care. You don't even have to delete your account, make a big post about how you're not doing this anymore and I'm going away forever and I'm not. You just have to not care. And it, and trust me, I learned this with my first wife. If you ignore something, they'll go away. So, I mean, that's kind of how I'm approaching it.
I've never been a big social media guy or a news guy, to be honest. I just never follow too much. That's why I love podcasts so much. I can just put them on, listen to something that I'm already interested in, and I can hear different perspectives. And I think there is still a demand for the alternative views, and I think there always will be platforms that come up and service that demand. And as these major companies shift away from that, I think they're going to dig their own graves unless they can somehow get in bed with the government and get protection and get licensing. And that's the only way they can survive. And that's why I think, you know, Facebook and Google, why they're the scariest, because I think they know that already, whereas Twitter doesn't know that. Like even Jack said in the interview when they asked about regulation, he says, well, he doesn't view regulation as a way for a company to get a leg up. He views it, you know. He had a hard time explaining what he thought regulation was good for, which is a good thing because he's kind of said like, well, it's good to protect individuals, I guess. So, but I think he was trying to walk a tightrope. But he it's good to hear him say that I don't think regulation should be used to give a certain company an advantage. And that's why I kind of appreciate what he's doing and more. And before all this, I really kind of went with the mob a little more, just kind of like, yeah, this guy sucks, you know, he's banning these people. But now I kind of more appreciate who he is and what he's coming from, and of course the tremendous job that these companies have to deal with. And now I'm more anti-Facebook and Google than ever.
Yeah, there you go. Well, if the social networks take any cue from the old dying media, that is print and some things in radio, they understand they have to evolve. It's not that people don't want to listen to talk radio. People love talk. The problem is the way that the FCC and the governments have controlled it. And just same way with local, most different mediums. People want that medium. People still buy books and still buy paper, newspapers, but the medium is so heavily controlled, it's, you know, it kind of went stale and people went to get that information they want other places.
And, you know, a lot of companies, when they get big, they get, they, you know, they kind of miss out on the next wave. Like Blockbuster had a chance to buy Netflix like way early for like a few million dollars. And, you know, they thought, yeah, this, come on, this is a fad. And now they're out of business. You know, they were once the biggest and best company. And history has shown us all these companies that start from nothing. They get huge. And then when they get to a certain point, they just can't maneuver. Whereas the economy and other companies are maneuvering and competition's scrapping at them. And they just can't stay in business unless they can get a handout. Like GM did. That's the only reason why they're around today.
Freaking GM.
So let's go. Let's do this together. Let's go through my Facebook feed. Number one, Ocasio-Cortez tries to knock out Wells Fargo CEO during questioning and embarrasses herself instead from the Blaze. Pass advertisement. Here's something I do care about from Channel 6 here. The history and future of an old White Castle building.
I care about that.
We've got the wild story about rich people buying college seats for their kids.
That's awesome.
I didn't know that was that was unknown. I thought everyone just kind of assumed that happened.
Right, yeah.
Like, is that news?
Yeah, we've all met that kid.
Like, right.
That's just what happens, I thought.
Yeah, we've all met that kid. It's like, how are you here? How are you forced to park on campus?
Al Green from Fox News, Rep. Al Green on impeachment vote. Bigotry is impeachable. I don't care. DeVos moves to ease church state rules in education. No, don't care, because it's not really going to matter. This was posted by the New York Times, so of course it's a flame war.
You didn't start the great, flame war.
Great meme by the beautiful and wonderful Trisha Stewart. Great meme there. Yeah, so like I'm training my algo to start. All right, Babylon B. Ooh, Wayne Allen Root. All right, let's unfollow Wayne Allen Root. Okay.
To get better ads on Facebook, take out your gender on it, and then just start viewing lady underwear, and that's all your ads.
Is that your excuse, Harry? Oh, no, honey, I was just changing the algorithm. I wasn't.
Change the algorithm.
That's all.
Amazing ads. Changes your ads on YouTube, too. When you look up a video, look at this video. Look at what I got.
So let's
change the algorithm real quick.
Who's to blame for all of this? Clearly, it's the media.
I was going to say Spangle, but keep going.
Right. So this is from Variety back September 17, 2018, and they mentioned this in the Rogan interview, how YouTube's far right is using classic influencer tactics to promote its views, courtesy of Data and Society. Now, who's Data and Society? It's Rebecca Lewis from the New York-based nonprofit Data and Society. Recently analyzed a network of 61 influencers across 81 channels. Some of the YouTubers included in Lewis's analysis are widely known as fringe right-wing activists like Milo and Richard Spencer and Mike Cernovich and Gavin McInnes. You know, like Mike Cernovich and Gavin McInnes and Milo Yiannopoulos and Richard Spencer don't believe the same things. But
they're wildly different.
They're wildly different if you listen to them. Like, and so... This Data and Society, you know, I want to go look at Data and Society. Let's just do this because I should have done this ahead of time.
Okay.
So,
like everything.
Let's go, right, about, we want to be transparent about where our money comes from. Okay, this ought to be good. The issues that we address are complex, bunch of marketing bullshit. Frameworks and strengthen the diversity of our network, statement of independence, funding and partners, Bill and Melinda Gates, ACLU, Alfred P. Sloan, Open Society Foundation, so there's George Soros, John and Catherine, a lot of the people who fund NPR, the Ford Foundation, UNICEF, okay. W.K. Kellogg Foundation, Microsoft, a lot of Microsoft money flowing into this. New America, the New York Times funds them, okay. So they have general project in kind and event support. So they haven't necessarily received money from these people. Let's see what's in their financial statement. See who is actually. Why are you shaking your head? What's going on?
It's riveting
in the chat. Oh, is it boring? you know. So basically, this group is just a leftist group, and so they created a study networking together all the alt-right, and lo and behold, YouTube needs to ban all these people because Media Matters. And has said so. So, however, Lewis quickly noticed these right-wing YouTubers frequently appeared on other shows, including some hosted by more mainstream conservative libertarian YouTubers. That's why she included YouTubers like conservative commentator Candace Owens, Rogan, and Dave Rubin in her analysis. Yeah, so she could tie him to Richard Spencer. Plotting out guest appearances of far-right YouTubers, she discovered a tight-knit alternative influence network. Many of these YouTubers are less defined by any single ideology than they are by a reactionary position, a general opposition to feminism, social justice, or left-wing politics, she wrote in her report. In that network, self-proclaimed libertarian and conservative YouTubers play a key role in promoting racist and white nationalist views. That's because in many instances, they host members of the far right on their shows without effectively challenging their point of view. There is a really slippery nature to this, Lewis said in a media call. motives. She writes, far-right YouTubers regularly cast themselves as an alternative to mainstream media, and they paint a picture of political persecution against conservative and far-right points of view. I don't think you need to paint that. I think that's like, and you're starting to see that like Fox News, MSNBC did an expose as Fox News propaganda now, is like you saw at CNN, Brian Stelter, has Fox News gone too far this past weekend on his show? Mm. They avoid words that would get them banned. So, right, maybe because they want to say the N-word. Mm-hmm, they just don't say that.
Yeah.
Is what they're saying.
I can also read minds.
Right. They should. And so after this, after the, I mean, this is just Variety posting this. Mm. But after this report came out and they did a media blitz because they had $3 million to put into this networking algorithm where they have this cool little map that they put together, and you see like on this map you see Stefan Molyneux and Lauren Southern and Sargon of Akkad, links to Black Pigeon Speaks, who goes to V, who goes to Kraut and T, whoever they are, who goes to Andy Worski, who goes to Sticks and Hammer 666, who goes to Richard Spencer, who goes to Blair White, who goes to Dave Rubin, who goes to Prager, who goes to Rogan, who goes to James O'Keefe, who goes to Paul Joseph Watson.
So you just don't go on the Kumite. If you never went on the Kumite, you'd be fine. I'm probably the only one here that's seen the
Kumite. See, when I'm choking and drinking, that's when you guys need to talk.
I thought everyone was pausing because I said the Kumite, and everyone kind of looked at me like, the Kumite?
No, I was
going to go out in the woods and have a Kumite.
Choking to death.
I was wondering what a Kumite is.
It's this awful blood sport debate. It's where they take away everything that is good and wholesome about an argument, throw that in the garbage, and then just have just on out like just like arguments. And just like, yep, ad hominems, just let it come. Come on, let it happen. It's it is disgusting when it was very popular to watch. I did watch it because it was like a slow train wreck. But, you know, it was interesting for a time. But so, Variety, right? They understand. They're not ignorant of the whole process of you going out to California to do the shows, right? They cannot be ignorant of it. You know,
yeah,
because a lot of these different people are in this small little area out in California. So you just start booking shows on this other skew because you're not going to get on anything else.
Right.
So it's not a network that formed. That network formed just because that's the network that I'll accept them and let them on with a microphone to speak to. You know, they would do the exact same thing. People would do the exact same thing to other universes and just, you know, completely disregard some other media outlets.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, Elon. Oh, sorry, reading the chat. Yeah, Elon Musk was on there too. That V times T, which leads to Twitch, which walls on Twitch.
Well, you know, some of this is these people that are considered, you know, far right, and some of them I think are abhorrent people and have terrible views, and some of them are more closer like to the mainstream.
Like Lauren Southern, for instance. I don't think these, like Richard Spencer's clearly, you know, somebody who I have watched a couple times, and I'm like, you're clearly a white supremacist.
Yeah, there's no clearly question about it. And,
but like Gavin McInnes is a provocateur who says things that are provocative towards the predominant culture.
Correct.
In a way that maybe he believes it, but at the same time, he's trying to get people to think about things in a different way. And you go, you know, or Paul Joseph Watson, who's just devastatingly effective at putting in a 7-minute video all the ways that the left is wrong about things. Mm-hmm. And you go and fact check these guys and you go, their facts are mostly right. They're just presenting it in a way that I wouldn't present it. It's or Lauren Southern, who I think has grossly misrepresented what's going on in South Africa, for instance. You know, like you have to just be careful with the information that you bring into your mind. Like, you have to look at these people and go, I don't know. For people on the left, if you're hunting heretics, if you watch a Paul Joseph Watson video, you're a heretic. It doesn't matter if you agree with it. It doesn't matter if you disagreed with what you saw. But the fact that you ever clicked on the link – to engage in the content means that you are bad.
Exactly. Yeah. Or if you're a libertarian, then you interview a guy like, you know, one of these guys that are not libertarian, but they're outside the mainstream. Right. They have critics of the mainstream. So you want to kind of see if there's any common ground.
Right.
Like Dave Smith had a problem where he interviewed Richard Spencer and Chris Cantwell. And, I mean, they disagreed on almost everything. But, you know, and you've started realizing what their differences are. But the thing is, the mainstream will paint them all in the same light.
Yeah.
So it is important, I think, for libertarians to talk to some of these people to illustrate the differences. And of course, with the objection is, well, you didn't go hard enough against them. You didn't call them this and call them that. And it's like when you're having a conversation with someone face to face or just over the phone or whatnot, see where they're coming from and what views that they really have, not what's been skewed through this or what's been taken out of context. And a lot of times just hearing them talk uninterrupted is like, this guy believes that? This is ridiculous.
People,
or stupid. Or
people
just,
were mad. I mean, people were mad that Rogan... That A, Jack Dorsey went on Joe Rogan because he's Joe Rogan. Yeah. And people were mad at Joe Rogan because I don't know why. Like you saw media members. Tim Pool basically said, like, I know I'm gonna get media members. And then I saw a meme where it was like this blue checkmark media member saying alt-right figure Tim Pool. It just was insane. Like the amount of people after that or during that on Twitter that I follow a lot of blue checkmark journalists who work in DC or New York or you know, just kind of like that's kind of who I follow, or conservative people or mainstream journalists. It was amazing to me to see how many journalists were mad that Jack Dorsey was having that conversation with Tim Pool and Joe Rogan. And it's because I was allowed to hear for 3.5 hours nuance.
Correct. Yeah, you can't have
no
nuance.
Filter.
You can't be a human for someone. You can't think about from their point of view and realize this guy, he's wrong. I don't like what he says, but I can see where he's coming from. I can see where he's kind of wrong. I can see where he's a human.
Right.
And okay, maybe he's not the worst guy on the planet. You know, I can listen to him and I can come to my own conclusions.
It goes back to critical theory. Mm-hmm. I couldn't reinterpret this event for you, and I'm mad that you can just see it unfiltered.
Right.
And so what a lot of these journalists don't realize is that they went to the Columbia Journalism School. They took the postmodern Kool-Aid and they think about things that they are the ones who should be the gatekeepers of the content. And I'm sorry, like, you can listen to me and you can agree with me or disagree with me. Like, I'm amazed when I hear people that write in that disagree with me because I'm so right all the time. But
yeah, exactly.
But I'm also I'm mostly dumbfounded when I see people following me or listening to the show that don't agree with me. And I really love that because it shows that they're not willing. Like, I respect that person more than I respect somebody who just blindly does whatever. If you just whatever Tom Wood says is right, or whatever Ron Paul says is right, or whatever Sean Hannity says is right, or whatever AOC says is right, like, I respect those people less than the people.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Like my friend Doug, who disagrees with me all the time, but engages and reads and tries to understand what I'm saying. He just doesn't agree. Like, to me, I really do respect that. It annoys me sometimes, but you go, that's the way it's supposed to be.
You know what? I think one of the biggest problems a lot of these journalists have, they honestly believe the average person is dumb, and the average person is very easily led and very susceptible. So they think if this average person hears this horrible white nationalist say something, they're going to all of a sudden turn into white nationalist instead of what happens to 98% of people is this guy's an idiot. He's a moron. Like who would even believe this? Like this is not even none of this makes sense. I mean, but they have such a low opinion of the average American and they think, well, they're like, you know, that's why you said they're the gatekeepers. They have to make sure that they convey the proper message to us, you know, lesser, you know, humans.
Yeah.
And we have to be led in a certain way. Otherwise, we're just going to go and become terrible people somehow. And that's not true at all.
Because they really think that we're just all knuckle-dragging idiots.
Correct.
That we can't think for ourselves.
Yeah, especially when you leave, like, the coast and you come out here to the Midwest. It's like, oh, these people again. You know, there's no one out here that's highly intelligent.
It is the mindset of the heretic hunter. Mm-hmm. Like, and libertarians have this, too. You run into those libertarians who, like, if I explain it to you enough, mm-hmm. or if I explain it to you over and over, you'll get it. And then you'll agree with me. And there's never, like you see with Dorsey in that, he goes, I understand what you're saying. I don't agree with you. Yeah. And Tim Pool goes, fair enough. Like, you can, like, I don't know. I don't know what it is about our society right now, but we think that everybody has to agree with us. Like, yeah. And maybe it's the vanity of the age that we want that validation. We want to be, we want our own little group of followers, but, like, like with anarchism, for instance, I'm pretty close, but there are certain things that it doesn't matter if Walter Block explained it to me. I just don't think I agree. You know what I mean? Like, what if my private court doesn't agree with your private court, or I'm not going to recognize your legitimacy. Like, I can't get past that. I'm sorry. Like, you know, like there's little things like that that I go, I mean, within a geographical boundary, there's going to be have to be a centralization of force. Like, you can't have one neighbor having one court. And, you know what I mean? Like, there has to be some framework to it. And I just I run into these people who are anarcho-capitalists, who are pretty much cult members, trying to get me to join the cult. Just relent. Mm-hmm. Say you agree with me. Put a black and yellow sticker on your profile picture. Like, I could do that, but it almost feels to me like giving in. Like, I don't know. I get annoyed with the people who think that if you just explain something hard enough that I'm going to agree with you. And that's what it feels like with people when it comes to intersectional politics. Mm-hmm. Like, if you just understand the worldview of a black trans Asian hard enough, you're going to agree with them. It's like, but I might not. Like, and I'm an empathetic person, but there are other people who just aren't going to. And like, so why do you need to make them submit? And that mm-hmm. is really what it's all about.
100%. Yeah. Like you said, it's all about the submission. It's about creating different classes of people. I'm the class of knowledge. I'm the class that knows the right. You're the class that follows me and whatever I say. And if you don't submit to even the most, you know, ridiculous things on the planet, that might end up being true in the long run, and you might eventually get there. But if you don't get there right this second with exactly what I'm saying in this exact scenario, mm-hmm. you're a terrible person. And yeah. now that just drives you away, because no one thinks they're a terrible person. So right. now you're calling me terrible, then I don't want to go along with what you're saying, even if it ends up being, right. you know, something that is true and right and positive. So now you have that division. And I think we should just respect other people if they don't believe the things we believe in, as long as they're letting us believe what we want to believe and they're letting us live our lives and they're not trying to interrupt and butt in with us. Hey, there's nothing wrong. I mean, I go to the grocery store, 100 people are there, all of them are different religion, different nationality, different age, different everything, and yet somehow we all get along. Just,
right.
Just, I mean, and you know what? There's gun owners there. There's probably a half dozen, two dozen guns there. No one's getting shot. No one really knows or cares. And we're just all getting along. And it's, we go to the mall, same thing. So I think part of what happens online is we lose sight of the real world. And when you get face to face with people, we're all generally pretty good people.
Sometimes I do kind of, you know, want to do violence when I'm behind the person in the line that's, one, paying by check in 2019, two, the extreme couponer who brings out the binder.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, that's like, your fault, Harry. You have to look ahead and look at the people ahead of you like, 98-year-old lady with the perm, I'm going to go in a different line because she's pulling that checkbook out. And I'm going to go the line behind the single guy. She's real quick, no talk, no chit-chat. Right. He's going to just pay and go about his way.
Yeah.
So I blame you, Harry.
Yeah. The extreme couponers are sometimes the worst. I think the only time I was happy with one is that they felt bad because they were holding me up and gave me some coupons.
Well, there you
and
go.
Then,
that's
like,
nice.
I took like $50 off my bill. I was just sitting there like, what?
Yeah, I'll take $50 off my bill for 20 minutes. Hold up.
Yeah. Still got that soap. Still have leftover soap. I want to go back and go get more soap. Sorry. You have to max out. You have to max mm-hmm. it out. Yep. I get it. I used to follow Shannon Morse from Hack 5. She's an extreme couponer. It's some cool stuff. Sorry.
I want to kind of I want to end, and I don't know if have we played the Tim Cook thing from the ADL on the show. I feel like we might have, but it's a good refresher.
It doesn't ring a bell to me.
It's about 4 minutes long, but I think if you hear this, you hear the way that Silicon Valley thinks about itself. They're building a world. They're building a better world. And so he's speaking to the Anti-Defamation League, a left-wing and partisan Democrat outfit that postures as an anti-Semitism group. Now, I have heard it postulated. When I heard this clip originally on the No Agenda show, they said, you know, I think the reason that 25 outlets banned Alex Jones within one day was because they want to please Apple. Because the Apple podcast space, the Apple store for apps, Patreon doesn't really – like that guy believes in free speech. But he doesn't want to piss off MasterCard and he doesn't want to piss off Apple and his apps, his mobile app, because that's like where like 80% of our listeners are listening on an Apple podcast device right now. They're not listening on Downcast, you know, which is just an independent guy out there, or Todd Moore's Playapod, who's been on the program and supports not only us but free speech totally. You know, they're on the Apple podcast app. And so I would think about switching to Playapod or to a Downcast or, you know, I mean, Beyond Pod on Android. I don't know what you people do.
We do it correctly. We get RSS feeds and we try to.
Yeah, well, Google wants to transcribe every single podcast in existence.
Yeah, good luck.
Wow.
Also, speaking of RSS, rest in peace, Aaron Swartz. It's been, what is it? How long is it? I want to say it's 5 years since. Yeah. So screw copyright protections. Rest in peace, Aaron.
So when you hear this, you hear Fahrenheit 9/11. You just hear
451.
451. Thank you. Fahrenheit 9/11 was the fat guy with the hat. Who made the documentary? So just listen to the way that this guy thinks, and imagine that everybody in the Valley wants to be on his platform.
And so
this is Apple CEO Tim Cook.
Try to stay rooted and to keep our devices connected to the humanity that makes us. Us. We do that in many ways. One of the most important is how we honor a teaching that can be found in Judaism, but is shared across all faiths and traditions. It's a lesson that was carried forward by the late Elie Wiesel. May his memory be a blessing. It's a lesson put into practice by America's Muslim community, who raised thousands for the victims of the Tree of Life killings. Lo ta'amod al-dam re'eka. Do not be indifferent to the bloodshed of your fellow man. Do not be indifferent. This mandate moves us to speak up for immigrants and for those who seek opportunity in the United States. We do it not only because their individual dignity, creativity, and ingenuity have the power to make this country an even better place, but because our own humanity commands us to welcome those who need welcome. It moves us to speak up for the LGBTQ community, for those whose differences can make them a target for violence and scorn. We do so not only because these unique and uncommon perspectives can open our eyes to new ways of thinking, but because our own dignity moves us to see the dignity in others. Perhaps most importantly, it drives us not to be bystanders as hate tries to make its headquarters in the digital world. At Apple, we believe that technology needs to have a clear point of view on this challenge. There is no time to get tied up in knots. That's why we only have one message for those who seek to push hate division, and violence. You have no place on our platforms. You have no home here. From the earliest days of iTunes to Apple Music today, we have always prohibited music with a message of white supremacy. Why? Because it's the right thing to do. And as we showed this year, we won't give a platform to violent conspiracy theorists on the App Store. Why? Because it's the right thing to do. My friends, if we can't be clear on moral questions like these, then we've got big problems. At Apple, we are not afraid to say that our values drive our curation decisions. And why should we be? Doing what's right, creating experiences free from violence and hate, experiences that empower creativity and new ideas, is what our customers want us to do. Technology should be about human potential. It should be about optimism. And we believe the future should belong to those who use technology to build a better, more inclusive, and more hopeful world.
So that's kind of the meat of it. Impressions of that?
You know, it's hard to argue with it. I mean, no one wants to associate with certain people, and that's okay. And
right.
I'm sure 99% of his customers probably agree with that, and he's a business. You know, I'm just wondering who is going to define, though, what is hate and how is this, you know, how is this coming about?
Well, who is a violent conspiracy theorist?
Who's violent? Yeah, exactly. Now, who's going to...
Frankly, Alex Jones is a conspiracy theorist, mm-hmm. but he's not violent, and he's not what no. was just like... And that sort of what strikes me is that he is relying on news reports mm-hmm. that are wildly taken out of context. And that's what's maddening about all this. It's the Oliver Darcy's. It's like that article with this fake. You know, if a right-wing think tank had come up with the same network of the left YouTube channels,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
the newsroom would roll their eyes so hard, and that's not a credible, valid source, but somehow... Yeah.
And you can find the same crap, by the way. This lefty talked to this one who advocates for genocide of this
right.
group because yep. they have money.
Right. It's Discover the Networks is an yeah. actual site. You know, but my point being is like the news has the bias mm-hmm. of this mm-hmm. group, and so it gets printed. And so, yeah, that's really what it comes down to is if racial supremacy is wrong... Then are you going to police that for only white supremacy, for all supremacy? Like, are you going to in that conversation with Jack, you see the messiness of mm-hmm. it all. You know, I agree with you. I don't think anybody disagrees with what he said, and he has every right to not host Alex Jones on his platform. But it's like, if you're going to make the decision to be the arbiter of what is hate or what is not, I think they should be more responsible with the information they're using. Like, sit down and watch a couple hours of the guy at least, you
right,
know? Like,
yeah.
you know, I think because, and that's what people like us have done, why we roll our eyes. It's like, I don't agree with Alex Jones, but I've watched Alex Jones. So mm-hmm. I'm an informed consumer of mm-hmm. content. I don't like Steven Crowder. I don't like watching his show. I don't find value in what he does.
Yeah, I can't stand him personally.
Right. But if somebody else does, who am I to tell them? I am a grown man, and they're a grown person, and it's not for me to say, I'm sorry, you don't get to think these things, or you don't get to consume this content and maybe be challenged by it, or challenge it. You know, I just think it's so amazing that somebody has such a messiah complex that they think they should be the arbiter of what other adults get to consume. You know, you're a platform. You're a tool.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're an editor, you know, and I just think we've been sold these platforms as tools,
mm-hmm.
and they're not acting in that way, and they're not acting with full information, and they're not acting, they're acting for the benefit of their own vanity instead of truth, or I think they're just kind of violating their responsibility to be good citizens because they're not actually like fly Alex Jones. You know what that's going to do? Fly Alex Jones in and have a conversation with him.
But
what harm would, you know, like, yeah, I wanted to meet the guy. I want to have a conversation with him. Like, what would be the problem with that? The problem is the media. It's the blue check marks. These are the people running our world right now. Like, Jack Dorsey goes and meets with Joe Rogan, and it's a problem. It's a problem for the blog roles. Yeah. Like, it's amazing to me.
Yeah. Well, they're all just going to have a problem.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, because, yeah.
They're jihadists. That's really what it comes down to. They're jihadists. It's the jihadist attitude. You're either a Western, you have a Western attitude of, mm-hmm. I'm going to consume the liberal arts. I'm going to consume the vast array of knowledge. I'm going to, mm-hmm. gathering knowledge is a way of life. Or I know the truth and you must submit to my truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, it goes back to that they don't trust the average person with
right.
freedom, with the ability to listen to different points of views. And then make a decision based on their own critical thinking. And,
yeah.
and I think that's just the biggest problem with a lot of these you know, tech giants, a lot of these people in colleges that are sort of in these positions, is they just have such a low opinion of the average person. And maybe I'm optimistic, but I mean, I've met people from every walk of life. I've been in sales for over a decade from before my dad career and, you know, in a metropolitan Detroit area with every type of person you can meet. And what I learned from interacting with all these people was that we're all just the same. That's it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, we're all intelligent, and we all have different types of intelligence. But mm-hmm. it's very hard to like just lead someone somewhere they don't already want to go.
Right.
And you know, people are for the most part critical thinkers. You know, and they're gonna be able to consume this information. And I think, as long as there's no one in a position of power that's leading people down a certain way, which is, you know, something I learned from Thaddeus Russell. He wrote a book, The Renegade History of the United States, and he yeah. talked about a lot of these working class people throughout the history of the U.S. They hung out with people of different races and different this and that, and people were integrated, and they worked together, and they went to bars together, and it was the elites, it was the politicians, it was the, you know, the people that were in charge that sort of drove that division, because the last thing you want is to have 99% of people kind of all chummy, and the people that got all the money and power look, you know, all of a sudden we're looking, wait a minute. Whereas if you can get the average person kind of, you know, fighting each other a little bit, they get to stay on top. I mean,
yeah.
look at how fast the United States went from being a segregated country to an integrated country. Like, mm-hmm. it happened over 2 decades.
Yeah.
And if there was
like, gay rights, like yeah. the culture yeah. changed yeah. in a decade,
and then
the government had to change.
Yeah. It's mm-hmm. because, well, I honestly, I think it's a little other way around. I think the government started changing a little bit, and they started loosening up laws. Then people just were kind of like, yeah, what's the big deal? Yeah.
Colorado is on fire right now. Like, Colorado is just such a mess after you know how like people, the free movement of people kind of shows you where economic opportunity mm-hmm. is, and mm-hmm. the less secure and safe a place is, people don't travel there. I mean, you know, I've had 5 friends in the last 2 years move to Colorado, and I've had a dozen friends go and visit Colorado. So, you know, weed legalization clearly has shown that it's not a dystopian future there. You know what I mean? Like, and that's what's crazy to me. Like, here in Indiana, we're debating marijuana legalization, and you go, the state police think that unofficially every 100th car coming from the Michigan border, where weed is now legal, into Indiana is full of weed.
Probably, yes.
Yeah. The official estimate is 250 cars, but yeah. it's probably 100.
It's just going to get worse.
And we're losing out on that economic benefit, you know. Mm-hmm. But you look at Colorado and you go, it's so safe and so secure and so attractive that young people are flocking to it, traveling to it.
Mm-hmm.
What freedom, when freedom is tried, it works.
Correct. Yeah, and Canada went legal, but they're messed up because they restricted so much on the growing and the ability to distribute weed.
Right.
So they've messed up, which Michigan messed up a little bit, so it's getting a lot slightly better.
Yeah.
And it sucks that Indiana farmers, you know, they're not going to be able to get on that new cash crop.
But. All right, Mike, agreed. Final thoughts?
No final thoughts. I think I made my points.
All right. If people want to follow you on Twitter, how can they do that?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter once in a while. I don't do a lot of posting nowadays, but just Mike Tront on Twitter.
T-R-O-N-T.
T-R-O-N-T.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Harry?
I listened to a podcast, and he once said, listened to Sovereign Tech, and he once said that the social networks are kind of like the lead pipes of the Roman Empire, mm-hmm. that we keep them and go around for vanity's sake, but it is making us sick in the head.
Mm.
And the more and more I've been off most social networks and just watching people interact with it, I kind of get it. I get it more and more and more. If you can get on it and you can manage it, fine, good, more power to you. You know, I'm not gonna, you know, like poo-poo someone for being on it all the time, but I enjoy technical sabbaticals. I love my technology, but I love just getting away from tech for 24 hours. It's a lot of fun. I recommend everyone try it, especially now that it's warming up, mm-hmm. especially when it's warm up. Just put your phone, keep your cell phone on it for safety reasons, but other than that, put it on silent, put it in your pocket, go for a walk, don't touch your phone, don't touch it, don't touch it.
Sundays, I go to church and I leave my phone in the car, or I go for a walk mm-hmm. and I'm away from it for an hour, or, you know, like I have an older iPhone that I use as an iPod,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not checking social, I'm not looking at that, you know? Yeah. So, I agree with you.
And the other thing with the whole Facebook censorship thing, and that's another reason why that a lot of the social networks went away from a lot of the federated code that they were using, because then you couldn't get away from it. And then Jack also mentioned, like, yes, if everything was blocked on a blockchain, everything is permanent, you can't do this, and that's where technology is eventually going to go. Someone's going to set that up. Once they figure out how to make money from it, someone's going to set this up and go do that. I do appreciate that they were a little bit more forthcoming. I think they should, in the future, when they do go ban somebody, they should probably leave their page up and leave the post like, we banned them because strike one, strike two, strike three, and kind of leave it up there like some sort of, you know, like tombstone of the account they just banned. So you're not just like wondering, or they're not able to sit up there like, no, they just banned me for this.
Yeah, I didn't say that.
Mm. And then it's like, boom, banned, boom. You know,
I think that would do a lot to help kind of dissuade a lot of the tensions and the concerns about this and that.
Correct. Yeah. Add some transparency. The other thing I think they should probably do, if they're listening, is that
of course they are.
Hire some people to do some of your security people. Move them to the Midwest. Hire some Midwesterners. Just hire some normal people. Normal, middle-of-the-road people. You know, and you will get some completely different responses for different things. Nah, that thing's fine. That thing's fine. You know, go out in the middle of BFE, hire somebody. You'll find out they're really inexpensive, especially from the group that you're buying.
So. All right. Harry, any other final thoughts?
Let's see here. No. Glad that you're not dead.
Thank you.
Would have sucked if you died.
Apparently, because none of you could have handled it.
First off, could have handled it perfectly fine.
I have set it up so that if I die, Mike, it's going to be a mess.
Nice.
Things can continue, but very dysfunctionally. I've given access to the wall feed for Hody.
Mm-hmm.
So Hody has access to the fireside where the podcasts are posted. I'm going to give Harry access to the hosting account. Jeremiah, every podcast host has access to their own stuff. Only Stone has access to the Facebook and the Instagram. Our friend Melissa runs the Twitter. So it is a disparate kingdom of backups, and not one other person. Nice. Because of my own Nixonian paranoia.
Well, it's like you're a third world dictator. If you get taken out, all these factions are going to fight each other.
Right.
And it's going to be just...
See.
It's like Alexander the Great dies. You got the Ptolemies over here, and you got... Yeah.
It's not like that. It's not like that at all. Let me tell you what really happens. I've already got my alliance with
CIA.
With Reinhold and Escalja and James. We've already filed DBAs, so doing business as Chris Spangle, and we're just going to just go through and interact and just start taking things back.
So he's got the government on his side, basically. He's got the CIA on his side.
Straight status.
That group is very weak compared to the boss hog of Liberty.
Very strong.
You,
I will appease him with microphones.
Peace out the equipment.
Yeah.
Well, apparently you don't care about equipment because of the sound of the low-key wall. Reinhold and everyone sound great.
It sounded great. I think I sounded great too.
Paul has the YouTube. Yeah, I've got a set, and I've tried to give very little to Jeremiah just to give you a fair shot. Because Jeremiah, the boss hog of Liberty, will swoop in and take whatever he can. We've seen this. He homesteaded my board. Sold it right out from under me without permission. Still hasn't given me the money for the board that he sold.
Wow.
He said, "Oh, it's an investment in Boss Hog. It's for the network." I'm going Thursday to see how much value I get out of them being on my network. Because they're costing me money. I want to see what they're adding to my coffers.
Yeah. Yeah, bring the accountant, send some invoices.
Yeah. They better at least be tithing.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know,
10% of their harvest.
There you go.
Yeah. Or putting in for your hot tub. Because we got to get a hot tub, too.
I think so.
No. Hot tubs are gross. They're fecal soup. I will not get in a hot tub.
Why?
Because it's fecal soup.
Wash your butt before going in the hot tub.
I will wash my butt. My butt will be clean.
Right.
It's the 15 other people that get in there who haven't washed their butt.
How big is this hot tub?
Well, if I'm going to get a hot tub, it's going to be big, right, Mike? You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Yeah, you know, and I got bitches.
Then install the bidet.
I got a hot tub big enough for boats and hose. Stupid. No, I really, but I was thinking about this, like if I really did die, you know, because my friend Michelle came over that Saturday and it was touch and go. Like I was like, should I ask her to take me to the hospital? I thought about it the other day. I was like, not one person has access to everything. Just because people kind of go, you know, yeah, I'll take care of that. Like, Melissa's really good at tweeting, you know, but she doesn't get on Facebook. Stone gets on Facebook. You know, for Stone and Jake, they post stuff on Facebook. Hody does the dailies, so I'll give him the wall. You know, and if I die, like, Hody's taking over. Like, I want you to understand this. Like, you better be ready because Hody's ambitious. Like, Hody's ambitious but nice. He's Mormon. So he's super nice,
right?
But you don't see him cutting your throat while he's doing it, and he can do it because he has magic underwear.
Yeah, he's like the guy in the trench coat. It's you shoot that one first.
Yeah, no, Hody. We've been so lucky to have Hody, and I hope you are enjoying his work. And he and Sarah and Reinhold and Paul and all the dailies that they're putting out. But yeah, I'm telling you right now, if I die, you better be ready. Because the boss hog angle and the Hody angle, it's gonna be brutal.
We'll be fine.
It's not like in the Greg days where you had like an appointed successor.
We'll be fine.
Yeah.
My group will be fine.
He left the kingdom. And he formed his own kingdom.
My group would be fine. I have the highest performing live.
Autislandia.
I have the highest performing live aspect of Wall.
I'm rooting for
14 listeners, right?
Right.
There you go.
Yeah.
Dozens almost.
Dozens almost.
I'm rooting for you, but mostly I'm rooting for all of you to fight a lot because that'll be fun for me from heaven. We should put up a poll in the group. Who would you like to see take over Wall after Spangle dies? And which of the three princes of We're Libertarians? And listen, there's the patrons too. The patrons are a very powerful group.
Mm-hmm.
Who will Craig? I mean, who will Craig and Christy and
Christy? You have to talk
Jason
to
and. Intern Ed,
that's a good point.
Then the Libertarian Coalition, they're a whole coalition.
If I somehow get the rights to Chris Spangle's dead body, then sell him to Christy.
And what if Jeremiah is smart and forms an alliance with Hody?
Oh.
See? There's a lot going on here. God, more than I think you think.
Mm, Gotta watch out for what
you're just like. I'm the co-host. I'm here every week.
I got this.
I don't know, man.
I got this. Got this.
A little overconfident.
Maybe.
No, it's not overconfidence.
I think it's fear.
Yeah.
Are you telling us you're confident? Like you're telling us you're using DuckDuckGo?
Trying to convince himself.
Yeah.
I got this.
Is this DuckDuckGo confidence?
I got Reinhold. I got Nice and Escalja. We got this.
But you don't have any of the passwords except for Twitch.
All I need is Nice.
Discord. That's true.
I have the Hulk. Okay.
Nobody has the... You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to give the login information to the website to my brother. and then the family, oh, this is going to be a whole court battle. This is going to be awesome. I'm really... But see, I know Jeremiah and Hody. See, I know that like the podcast will always exist.
Mm-hmm.
The website, you can let that go.
Nobody needs
the website.
No. It's okay. I'm just going to franchise it out and sell it to Disney.
A franchise might be good. Yeah, don't sell it
to Disney.
You know, here's what I want. I want you to take over the Chris Spangle show. So we have had this joke. So I used to do, I would come on and do the Jeff Vibbert podcast with Jeff Vibbert and Caitlin. And then Jeff went to work for someone who didn't want him to do the Jeff Vibbert podcast anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And for perfectly valid reasons, but mm-hmm. it just kind of abruptly stopped.
Yeah.
And so I was always asking Jeff, and I still do, can Caitlin and I do the Jeff Vibbert podcast,
yeah.
but you're not on it?
Yeah.
Because to me, that's the funniest thing ever. Like, I love Andy Kaufman, the comedian, or Borat. Like, you don't know what's real or what's not.
Just
like,
never address the change at all. Just never bring it up.
Mm-hmm. Like, there's a radio show, The Kid Chris, had The Kid Chris Show.
Mm-hmm.
And he died in a car accident. But The Kid Chris Show is still on in, like, Philadelphia and a bunch of cities. Like,
yes.
They just kept the name going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, So I always wanted to do the Jeff Ripper podcast without Jeff, but he wouldn't let us, so he didn't want to get in trouble.
Yeah. It would have been funnier, speaking of local, like inside baseball, like when Abdul and Rob did the Chicks on the Right show on Monday. It would have been funnier if they, instead of saying they were on vacation, just did the show, just came in and just announced.
I'm Mock, Buck, I'm Daisy. Yeah.
And just went on with the show.
Right.
Would have been gold.
Well... If I die, here's what I want you to do.
Uh-huh.
I'm putting you in charge of this.
Okay.
Maya,
mm-hmm.
Greg, Joe, Gina, they all have to come back and do an episode each.
Oh, no.
Greg and Kat can do an episode.
No.
Just really, and they can say whatever they want about me, whatever they really think. And Maya is Antifa now, and I know I know what Maya thinks of me. I've heard through the grapevine. Mm. She blames me for a lot of stuff that she did to herself. Oh, that would be the great. Oh, that'd be great. Please. Well, this has been fun. I'm glad to be back. It's been great to be back with you.
I had fun, too. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I appreciate
that. Thanks, Mike, and appreciate you taking time away from the kid and leaving the tired wife. And you know, you'll have to.
She worked like 10 hours today and got home and then took over the kid duty while I hang out with the fellas.
Smartest thing you can do is go home and ask for sex. sure death, Harry. Sure death.
No, not necessarily.
Just back rub, you know.
Yeah. He's a kept man, so you.
Right. So.
She gets
I'm the trophy here. Yeah, that's right.
Quite the trophy.
Yep.
Quite the trophy.
Quite the trophy.
Yeah, real erection you are. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us here on this episode of Weird Libertarians. We will see you next Tuesday. This crew will have some dailies, hopefully, this week. The crew got a little behind. Hody's been distracted he's putting together a debate series with all the candidates that he can find, and that's going to be really cool. Nobody else is going to do this, and nobody has ever done this. Like, it's monumental, so I really want you to support Hody and the debate series that he's about to put out. and share that stuff, put that out there, grab it from the Facebook, from the website and everything else. So please go and check that out. And it's going to be great stuff coming to you soon. But for me, I will see you next Tuesday. And to Mike and to Harry, I say thank you. And to all of you, I say thank you as well. And we'll talk to you next Tuesday.